Welcome to the 50 million download Q&A session with Jim and Aaron. It's our new official podcast. Every download we get, we're going to be doing one of these.
Oh, Jesus.
50 million and one, 50 million and two.
We're probably more like 54, 55 million.
Yeah, it's...
Game of Thrones season hit and just, you
we
know.
Slept on this one for a while.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's like we were, yeah. We wanted to actually reach the broadest number of fans because this is kind of a nice thank you for the fans. And so we held on to Game of Thrones season, but unfortunately we didn't have time to record it until afterwards. So anyway, that's, we're 50 million. 50 million downloads is a lot of downloads.
And counting, yeah. I mean, this is not only for the fans. I think this is also the one time of year, I don't know, these seem to be almost yearly, where we sort of do some self-congratulatory stuff.
Yeah.
I think 50 million is an insane number of downloads, something I thought, if you had told me in 2010 when we started this, oh, by the way, in a decade you're going to have 50 million downloads, I would have laughed in your face.
Yeah.
And said, how can that possibly happen? We're just two dudes in the middle of nowhere talking into microphones. We know nothing. And yet here we are.
Here we are.
And it's astounding.
It is.
I can't believe that we're here.
There are times when the right show is on the air, Game of Thrones, that we are among the biggest podcasts around. And then there's other shows where we kind of fade back to the obscurity that we're more comfortable in. Our D-list internet fame, but it's incredible that we reach those heights and just have, like, you know, it's always interesting when, you know, you hear from someone that's, you know, been around since like season four of Breaking Bad, and how many of those people that we still have around. And you know, I just feel a big debt to all of the fandom, obviously. The people that listen, the people that send in feedback, the people that participate in the forums, the people that make me laugh on social media. Double thanks go to all the club members, because you people honestly are what keeps Bald Move going. Like, we don't get a lot of ad revenue. I remember one of our goals when we first set out to make Bald Move profitable was, like, we would like to establish at least a third of our income coming directly from the fans, because we thought that would be a nice little security blanket, because that's something no one can take away from you. Like, you can lose your advertising, you can lose sponsorships, you can lose, you know, affiliate links, and we have. But as long as you don't piss off the fans, as long as you're true to your, you know, as long as you're true to yourself, then that's something stable. And we have, like, you know, 85-90% of our revenue coming from our fans. So that feels unbelievably nice and secure.
Yeah.
Also like to thank some of our moderators, like at the forums. We've got Alcade, Cretan Bull, D, Murder Bear. In addition to myself and Jim and Cecily, that kind of keep the peace there and enforce the rules. Appreciate you guys keeping 24-hour watch on that situation. And then Twitch, it's harder, because Cecily and I got drunk one night and just moderated everybody in the chat. But I know some people that have been doing a lot of work in the last few weeks and months, as Nars, Fuzzy Snuggle Kitty. Counterfeit really helped me get things going with Nightbot back in the beginning. C Drive, Josh De Black, Gelato King, people I've seen actively moderating the last few weeks. So thanks for that. And then finally, the other thing that's been real fun is people sending us stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And over the years, we've gotten everything from Young Pope Kangaroos, which was a kangaroo dressed as a pope. Dragon Glass Daggers. We received numerous ravens from King's Landing. Sexy posters of Rob Lowe, these fucking Yeti cups that I can't even live without anymore. So many movies and books and video games and T-shirts and a life-size Paul Giamatti. Like, we've gotten a lot of fun stuff, and thanks to everybody that sent that. Like, I can't wait to get the new studio up and running so that we can show. Like, we ran out of room at the old place, and we just started like storing the stuff. But now we're hoping to get all that stuff out. And show it off. So a lot of love we've gotten over the years, and I just never feel like I do a good enough job of expressing it, but it means a lot. It is a strange, humbling experience to have this much people that you don't know care about you.
Yeah, I mean, that's the thing. You can't express your gratitude to each of them individually, right? This is like the time that we get to do this.
Yeah. You know? And we've met, like we've had the opportunity to meet hundreds of different people as we go around the country to different, cons and expos and just different events. And we've held our own, and hopefully we'll do some more of those in the future. So, yeah, if you ever have an opportunity, come and say hi if we're ever out there. But, yeah, it'd be great if we could personally thank everybody. I don't know. Hopefully we do enough to make you guys feel special. Because, honestly, we spend a lot of time thinking about what you guys want, what you guys like, and how we can achieve those goals with our budget and time and money. Shall we get to the actual Q&A part?
Yeah, we have a whole bunch of questions this week. All of them have been premeditated, let's say, because a lot of them are pretty involved questions.
Yeah.
And if we're ever going to take time to answer those type of not so off the cuff questions, now is probably the time. Let's start off with Travis, who clearly, by way of getting his question read first, is the most important Bald Move supporter.
Yes,
the number one fan, I assume.
Yeah, these obviously questions ordered in order of how important a fan you are to Bald Move.
Yeah, of course.
That's clearly not true. Please understand humor.
Yeah. So Travis says, asks, how many downloads will be enough, you madmen? What does future Bald Move look like when Aaron is 55 years old and Jim has stayed the same age because he is a robot? Here's to 50 trillion downloads. I don't think we'll get there.
Do you take all of our downloads, you divide them by zero, and whatever that number is, that's how many. I want a number that breaks the fucking universe. I want your calculator to say, not even going to try. I want it to be mathematically impossible to calculate the number of downloads that we have.
It's an imaginary number. Yeah, I mean, it's not really about the number of downloads. It's more about the number of podcasts. How many podcasts will be enough? And we're still going strong after 10 years, so I don't really see a huge stopping point to this.
More pods for the pod god. More cast for the cast throne.
He demands it.
There's other questions that kind of better strike to the heart of like where we see things. Because I think that's what people want to know. Like, where do we see this thing going? Might shock you to know that we don't know. We didn't see this. I 5 years ago, I would have never saw us here. 5 years before that, I wouldn't have seen us at that position. But I do think there is a desire from both of us to maybe, over the next year or so, now that, as we'll explain, there's things that we've achieved a little bit more stability, to maybe come up with a 3 to 5 year plan. So we'll get to that. Greg's up next. Do you guys get nervous when releasing content? Approximately how many burritos? Wait. Let's maybe take these one at a time.
Oh,
do you guys
spoilers.
Ever get nervous when releasing content?
I used to. I don't anymore.
There's some times where we're trying something new, or it's a new show, or, stuff that's, like, important to us that I feel like I want to get things right, and I don't want to make mistakes, and I want to put our best foot forward, and I get nervous about that kind of stuff. Just like, am I going to do this good enough? Is this the year where everyone catches up to us and beats us at our own game? Like, there's just kind of that nervousness, but it's like, oh, God, what am I out here doing talking about stuff? No, not so much.
I mean, I constantly worry. Yeah. Like, I would describe, like, the content I released that you might be talking about as being nervous is more like I'm worrying about it. Like, are people going to care about this? Did I do a good enough job on editing it? Did I miss anything? That I fucked up an edit somewhere? That kind of stuff. Oh, I'm stressed out about the logistics of it all.
Yeah.
Not so much like, oh, I've got to record this thing and I get nervous.
Maybe we should worry more, because I just think it's funny that we did this big Paul Giamatti Christmas thing last year and we spent so much fucking time on that. And never once did anyone actually want to see this. Maybe we should have asked that question, because the answer was like, what did you guys make and who was it for?
Yeah.
So I guess we made it for us. But yeah,
I mean, at the end of the day, yeah, that was
it. But I wasn't worried. I wasn't nervous. I wasn't like, oh, this is going to make people stop liking us. It was more just like, yeah, it's fun. So, secondly, Greg says, approximately how many burritos has Jim eaten in the time it took to reach 50 million downloads? Well, I mean, that's doing this for like they reach 50 million. So that starts with Blue Yonder. We're going on 10. Next March, we're going to go on 10 years of Bald Move. But like when we really started racking up numbers was like 3 years after that, right? When we started doing Breaking Bad.
Mm-hmm.
So we've had about 7 years of downloads. So 365 times seven. Like,
is that right?
I mean, every work
we did a podcast every single week for until we shut down Blue Yonder.
Yeah.
And there were 77 episodes.
Yeah.
It's only like a year and a half. So I think we're more like 8.5 years of
really
hitting download numbers that matter.
How many? So that's the other question I have is like, I mean, it's a joke, but you no joke eat a shit ton of burritos.
Yeah. So my burrito habit coincided.
Like Monday through Friday, you're hitting 80% of those at least, right?
Yeah. I'm estimating 200 burritos a year.
200 burritos a year?
And I feel like that might be conservative.
Yeah.
I don't eat burritos on the weekends because I dine with my girlfriend.
Uh-huh. She's viciously anti-burrito.
She's just not as into it, you know? And I can't blame her. Nobody, uh-huh. hardly anyone is into it as much as I am with Chipotle burritos. So 200 a year is what I estimate.
So
and I've been living here for 5 years in Cincinnati, and that's when it started because I don't know that I had had any Chipotle burritos before that. Maybe a couple. So that's like 1,000 burritos.
1,000 burritos.
I'm going to say I'm at 1,000 burritos.
One milla burrito.
A K. Yeah, 1K.
A kilo burrito.
Right, I could have eaten 1 kilo burrito, but instead I've eaten 1,000 burritos.
I wonder how many by weight. Like those are pretty beefy. Like the 2.5 pound burrito, maybe.
Yeah,
it's a lot of. You might have eaten a metric ton of burrito.
Of burrito? God, wow. Okay.
All right, that does it for Greg.
Before that, I was kind of the same way with Jimmy John's, though. I would eat a Jimmy John's sandwich basically every day after work.
Judging by how many cups you had in your kitchen, you were at one point by about the hot box pizza too.
Yeah,
you had approximately 73 hot box pizza cups in your kitchen cupboard at one point.
Yep. All right, Jeffrey says, besides starting a global empire, what is your greatest accomplishment? I've premeditated this one.
I mean, I premeditated too, but I think like I just these answers are tough. Like greatest accomplishment, like I'm supposed to say my marriage raising a pretty interesting 12-year-old that I love and admire a lot. But I feel like those are also very trite.
Yeah, yeah, it's. But they're also, I mean, they're trite for a reason, right?
Yeah.
These are like the biggest milestones in everyone's life. So.
Yeah, yeah, they're big deals.
Yeah. I think you're allowed to answer a son or a marriage or
okay. Because like I mean, other things like recently I've been proud of is like I went from zero to sailing in like 2 or 3 years, and last year I sailed to a deserted island in Lake Michigan and camped there for like 3 days just with a 15-foot sailboat and what we were able to stuff inside of it. I thought that was pretty fucking cool.
Probably my biggest accomplishment outside of like Bald Move and, you know, building a huge global empire, as he said, is getting back into shape when I was in my late 20s, because I was extremely out of shape. I was 40, 50 pounds overweight. And I decided, you know what? I feel like shit. I look like shit. Let me get back on track here. And I did it. I spent like 2 years working out and eating better and, ended up in the best shape of my life. I'm not in that shape anymore, but I've pretty much kept off most of that weight. I would say I'm in okay shape now, reasonable human shape as opposed to what I was before.
No, I kind of did that at the same time. And that yeah, like setting that foundation in my early 30s definitely made it easier because I let myself go. And then I've tried to make a comeback in the last year. And it's a lot easier when you had that, you know, kind of a foundation to begin from.
Yeah, I think like knowing what to do and knowing that it will work if you just do it is pretty empowering. So yeah, that's my probably greatest accomplishment outside of this.
Steve would like to know, how did we meet and how do we start Bald Move?
how did we meet?
Yeah.
Like 25 years ago, we met at church.
Yep.
My family moved from California back to Indiana, ended up in a small rural town where you were going to church.
I often wonder
what I'd be like if I lived in California my entire life.
Traded shitty old San Diego
right.
for Mooresville,
SoCal.
Indiana.
SoCal. No one says anything good about SoCal.
No. Weather's terrible.
Yeah, yeah. The burritos. The
culture, terrible. Burritos.
Terrible, yeah.
Burritos, like, subpar.
Oh, easily.
I mean, what is any burrito place in San Diego got on Chipotle, if we're being honest?
Nothing.
Yeah, so that's how we met. We just happened to go to this small rural church, had like 100 people in the congregation, and we were close to the same age and had a lot of similar interests, so we kind of palled around and started Bald Move later, obviously 15 years later, just as so there's a couple of inciting events that started Bald Move. One is that Jim decided to do a podcast like a long time ago, like in the early midst of podcasting.
That was like 2006.
Yeah. And he did like 11 or 13 episodes of this like kind of like general nerd interest video game podcast that I had listened to just because he was doing a thing. And a couple of years later, we had gotten close again. We were kind of hanging out every week, and you were going to move to Chicago. And it was a suggestion that we start another podcast up because you'd already knew kind of how to do it. And that's something that could keep us, like, you know, interacting with people on a weekly – interacting with each other on a weekly basis and whatnot. And that's kind of how it started. Mm-hmm. Everything from there was just us refining it and kind of goofing around and trying to pivot to find an audience. And that's how we ended up with, moving from like video game nerd culture to TV and movies, and the rest is history. By the way, there's, we've done a lot of these Q&A podcasts over the years. And if you go to baldmove.com/about, there is an archive of all those. So like anything we say piques your interest, like when we refer to, we grew up as Jehovah's Witnesses, like, oh, that's crazy. I want to know more about that. We already have like a 2.5-hour podcast recorded just of all the Jehovah's Witness questions. So yeah. If you guys dig this, I encourage you to check that out. And also, not for nothing, we do this every week on Lunch with Jim and Aaron,
yeah.
If you're a club member. So let's move on.
Drew Nicorn,
right?
Nope.
Oh,
my turn. Drew Nicorn says, along this road to auditory stardom, what was the most valuable lesson you learned?
You have to take care. You have to maintain yourself. You have to take care of your health and your well-being and all that, because if you don't, it'll eventually bite you in the ass in the worst time you possibly can.
You'll end up like Kit Harington.
Yeah, right.
Going into rehab when
that's
show ends.
How this shit happens.
Yep.
You do 3 months of filming at night trying to defeat a Night King that doesn't even really matter, and you wind up with stress disorder and alcoholism. I think there was a couple off ramps where we could have slid into the alcoholism.
Oh,
for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If we kept the let's drink on the show as a thing.
Yeah. We're fun guys. We drink all the time, and now we're doing it full time. So let's start drinking at 9 o'clock in the morning and not stop until 11 o'clock at night some nights. Yeah. That would have led to a nice, healthy place. And you'd have to, of course, pick up cocaine to balance it out.
Yeah. Yeah. Depressants and uppers. You need your uppers and downers.
Yeah. Get some benzos at night to sleep. Cause otherwise you'd stay up all night. So that's my lesson. What's yours?
No, I think that's a good one. Somebody in my notes forgot to premeditate this one. So,
I don't know
who's to blame, but
fire.
I'm coming for you.
Fire Jim's assistant.
Yeah, you're gone.
#cap. I've been to Cincinnati on business a few times. Is Nicholson's really as cool as I think it is, or is it just traveler's bias? Admittedly, I have a thing for duck fat fries. Jim, I have a confession.
Mm-hmm.
I've never been to Nicholson's.
Not only have I never been there, I've never heard of it.
It looks cool as fuck.
How cool can it be if I've never heard of it?
I mean,
I'm clearly the coolest person in Cincinnati.
I think we should make a field trip for some duck fat fries and some cocktails at some point.
Sounds
good. We'll, on the 100 million downloads, we'll get back with you on that, Cap.
All right, let's move on to Mandy, who asks, what is your guilty pleasure TV show, and would you want to review each episode on a podcast? Why or why not?
I don't really have guilty pleasures now. I used to, like, a lot of, like, reality, like Discovery reality, like Monster House, Monster Garage, American Choppers, Mythbusters. Yeah. Some of those were guiltier than other pleasures. but I haven't watched any of those for like 10 years. Now it's like my light watching of stuff like Community, Parks and Rec, True Blood, Banshee, Penny Dreadful, Harlots. Some of those I podcasted on, some of them I haven't. I do think that it's got to be like a guilty pleasure would have to be something I don't podcast on, though.
Yeah.
Because like it fundamentally having to worry about what you're going to say about something fundamentally changes the experience of enjoying the thing.
For sure. Yeah. For me, it's the Great British Bake Off or Great British Baking Show. I don't know what fucking name it has in what country, but it's that one. And
does it got two? Is it different? Called different things depending on why would that be?
I don't know.
I guess if it's in the UK, why would it be called the British Baking Show? It'd probably just be the Baking Show, right?
But it's always the Great British because it's, I think it's Great British.
Uh-huh.
Not just like it's a great show and it's British.
Yeah.
I think it's like as part of the, I don't know.
Uh-huh.
I don't know. They always say Great British.
Okay.
So even when they're in Great Britain.
So it's not just British food, it's Great British food. It's not even food from Great Britain, it's Great British food. Okay, I got you.
Get some, I don't know.
My guilty pleasure is listening to Jim explain the titles of his guilty pleasure.
I would never do a podcast on this thing because A, there are far too many episodes, and B, I don't bake. So I couldn't intelligently podcast about it.
Is it my turn now?
Yep.
Amy. Can you discuss a bit about the leap of leaving jobs to do the podcast full time? Was there a particular moment where you felt you were achieving success and some of the pressure was off, or is it still stressful but in different ways? That is a great question. What do you think, Jim?
So it is still stressful at times, but it's a different kind of stress. The stress in the old days when we first went full time was, are we actually going to be able to put food in our mouths? And are we going to come out of this thing with $50,000 each in debt that we now just have to work jobs to repay?
Right. We've backed our way into a college loan in our mid-30s.
Yeah. And that was the scenario because when we first started full-time, I know both of us were actively going into debt. I was spending down my savings. I was charging up my credit cards.
Yep.
Just to make ends meet, just to stay, you know, solvent. And then we were hoping that somewhere along the way we saw a path to, you know, financial stability, but it was a long one.
Yeah.
And we've only recently just got, I think, to the point where where it feels right.
Yeah.
I think, like, I no longer have the stress of, oh, God, where is my food going to come from tomorrow? Am I going to be kicked out of my apartment
in
3 months?
If we don't increase revenues by 25%, we're going to be fucked because X, Y, and Z is going to happen. Yeah.
Now the stress comes from, like, okay, how do we make this thing bigger? And just keeping all of it sort of at the forefront of my life is difficult at times. Just, you know, there's so many things you have to do when you're a business owner. It's not just, I got to watch this show and talk about it.
Right.
There's 50 other things going on in the background, and trying not to drop any of those balls is easily the most stressful thing I've ever done in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Most rewarding too. I don't want to take anything away from it, but you know, it's a different kind of stress.
Yeah. No, I mean, I echo everything Jim said. We still have this spreadsheet where it used to calculate kind of our runway, like how many months we had and before we were bankrupt. Mm-hmm. And like that counter was never longer than 6 months until like the last year or two, where it's essentially, we're covering our expenses and then some. Mm-hmm. And now it's like, okay, we're starting to hire employees. Like you might not have heard, but we recently, Cecily's working for us part-time we're hoping to bring her on full-time by the end of the year. We've talked about, like, I think the ideal bald move size, at least for right now, would be like five people. because that would give us enough to where everyone could probably share the hats enough to where no one would be overworked, and we could have a, you know, it wouldn't have to be like this person's doing all of this and this person's doing all that. And we'd also be able to have interesting mixings of hosts for a variety of different shows to cover, and like maybe some time that we could do some other kind of fun stuff or experimental stuff. And to get to there and, you know, continually improving your audio and your video quality and what you can, you know, the quality of your coverage is going to take a certain amount of growth. Or, you know, because like, it's one of those things, like if you knew Bald, if like I knew for a moral certainty that Bald Move is going to be this size forever, it was never going to get any bigger, then I would do a lot of things differently than if the question of like, oh, well, maybe we could grow it by this or that, and then that would allow us to do this or that. But so, yeah, I mean, that's kind of the stress now. It's like, okay, what voluntary moves are we making that will hopefully lead to growth that might actually kill us? Mm-hmm. Or might, you know, like, what's the thing we're going to do that's going to just, like, you know, piss people off or, like, make us fall down on this vital thing? And the fact that we don't really the other thing I guess is a little bit nerve-wracking is we can't fully articulate why this has worked. Like, you know, when we go to different meetups and we talk to a bunch of other professional podcasters and we talk about our businesses and, like, we're just so freaking kind of unique in what we've done in a lot of ways that that's sometimes scary, that it's like, Jesus, I don't know how to replicate this. I don't know how to increase this thing without it necessarily decreasing this other thing. And yeah, that's kind of nerve wracking for sure. Mm-hmm. Let's see. Yeah, it's your turn.
Okay. Jez asks, could you two both give me a list of your top five albums of all time, please?
I've got mine. Oh
man, this is so hard.
These
are always the hardest questions. These top lists.
Yeah, I wrestled.
Yeah, I did too. I don't think I managed to get it to five, did I? 1, 2, 3, 4, 7.
I've got five, and three of them I think I've because this has been asked a couple of other times. I think three of them have stayed. So Blackalicious, Blazing Arrow, Florence the Machine, Lungs.
Ha, that's on my list.
Kendrick Lamar's Damn, Kanye West's My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, and Sturgill Simpson, Metamodern Sounds and Country Music. Is like the only thing I wish I could fit in there is like some thrash metal, because that was so instrumental to like my teens, and that's about it.
Like
I immediately
album.
Got out of it when I turned like 20-ish, but mm-hmm. I there should be some like classic Metallica or Megadeth in there somewhere too, but there's not.
Yeah, I was torn between just picking ones that have a lot of like sentimental value or that I very specifically remember from a certain period of my life that I liked. Most of these are from the 90s, mm-hmm. because I'm a child of the 90s, and these are classic all-time albums for me. Smashing Pumpkins, Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness just barely eked out, and I couldn't put two Smashing Pumpkins albums.
I thought you
on
might
list.
Go Siamese Dreams.
Some of the singles on Siamese Dreams, like Siamese Dream has my absolute favorite song uh-huh. ever, Mayonnaise, but this album is, I think, a better put together album,
sure.
better constructed.
Oh,
it's
amazing.
Yeah, it is. Nirvana's In Utero, Coheed and Cambria's In Keeping Secrets of Silent Earth 3, Rage Against the Machine's Rage Against the Machine. That's a hell of an album.
It's a good one. Soundtrack of my paintball playing years, for sure.
Florence and the Machine, Lungs. I think everybody's familiar with that one. Man, so this Bush pick is actually really difficult for me.
Yeah, when you're picking Bushes.
So I've already listed five, but I'm going to list the other two that I couldn't eliminate. I picked Razorblade Suitcase because I have very specific memories of a summer where I listened to it, like, all summer. 16 Stone was probably the better album, but I don't remember it as fondly. So yeah, Razorblade Suitcase, and then A Perfect Circle's Mare de Noms.
All right.
And that's it.
We did it. Definitive top five-ish sevens.
Yeah, five and seven.
Five-sevenths lists. Fern from NYC, this is an involved one.
Okay.
I have to tell a story.
Oh shit. Yeah, I didn't premeditate this one because it was too intimidating.
I've been a loyal Bald Move listener and member all these years, and I have an idea for my next project. I want to fly down to Cincy, right next to the Bald Move Studios, and tell you guys I would like to write and direct the Bald Move story. What a story of two lifelong friends separated and reunited, both dealing with Jehovah's Witness life, breaking free, and the consequences that came with leaving the witnesses, then building a business with a faithful community while also finding happiness in amazing moments. I'd like for you guys to be on board as co-producers and help me write/cast the story. I'll be back in a week for our first meeting where you'll have the following ready for me to review. Where would you like the movie to start? What would the end of the first act be? What would starts the second? Where would you like it to end? I feel like we should just start filling this in as we get them, right?
Okay, yeah, that sounds good.
Because, like, here's the thing. It's a three-act movie, or if we got the budget for it, a trilogy.
Okay.
I think it should start when you move to Indiana. Like, that's like the cold open of the movie. Like, mm-hmm. Your family... Did you guys drive out? Fly out?
We drove.
Yeah, you guys driving out here to from fucking San Diego to Mooresville, Indiana would be a visually interesting way to start the movie. Mm-hmm. And that's where our lives kind of intersect for the first time. And then the whole first act would be kind of like that childhood teenage period, right? I don't know how you condense it down to like a 30-minute act.
What if you told it in reverse, like Memento? Could you go from like the successful podcasters and just trace it all the way back.
Yeah, and have one, but there's also one unifying like structural arc that's moving forward in time at the same time.
Right. Yeah.
But like, I feel like the first movie or the first act would start, because there's definitely a period of life where, as Fern alluded to, where we lost track of each other. We both went through a lot of, I think, the same kind of trials and tribulations. It's just that I had a bedrock of faith in this fucking religion that you lacked, so you just kind of went off. You got off like at 18, like 17, 18. You hit the off ramp. Mm-hmm. And one of the tenets of the religion is once a person does that, you kind of like cut them out of your life. So then for like the next 10 years, you were living. I feel like it's like almost a Fellowship of the Ring situation where like Boromir dies, and then you go off to Mordor, and I go to, I don't know, Minas Tirith to fight Sauron, or vice versa. I'm not sure which. So this whole second act would be kind of like just what the hell we're doing before we get back together for the third act, which is the Bald Move period of our lives.
I feel like the first act especially is going to be pretty boring.
Yeah?
Yeah. I think you need a parallel structure here where you're like, okay, take a big event in Bald Move history. Like, mm-hmm. Let's say the big dispute over club price.
Okay.
And you can show, like, you can juxtapose, like, some of the anger from that with the friendship that's starting when, like, 10 years ago or 25 years ago,
right,
whatever.
Right.
And you can kind of show scenes between them to keep the first act interesting.
Yeah.
And then it can culminate, like, you can build through a second act where, you know, we're starting up the company and, like, taking this all seriously and professionally, and you can see sort of the road leading to this, and the third act resolves everything, right?
Yeah, you could also it would be interesting to dramatize like tensions in the company over like mirror tensions over like board game situations.
Yeah,
like, you could like have kind of like
we could
like a flashback would precede each chapter, kind of like this is the thing you need to know about us. It's going to be relevant in about 30 minutes when you see us going through this.
Yeah. How based on real events does it need to be? Because these movies always fudge a little bit, right?
Shit.
So what if we made that famous Castle Risk incident you instead of my dad? Where you were,
but then that
makes you look like a cheater.
That's one of my unfair categorizations. I don't like to cheat in video or any kind of game.
Yeah.
No, but you could do. I was going to make a joke of like maybe we could actually combine us into one character, like Chernobyl style. Like, oh yeah, there were several people that came together to make Bald Move, but it was just one guy.
Right.
So, further thoughts. What are your thoughts on the tone of the film? Comedy, serious drama, family film?
I think we're going serious drama.
But definitely like dramedy. Like, there's no way our movie would not also have hilarious things in it.
Sure. I mean, there have, like, been hilarious events.
We have been we've been part of hilarious events, crazy circumstances. There's no fucking way you could get out of it without laughing. But that's also Mad Men, you know, mm-hmm. which is not a particularly funny show. What will be overall message of the film? I came up with life is what you make it. But that sounds a little too, like, master of the fucking universe, because mm-hmm. I think, you know,
that's going to be the final message of Succession.
Yeah,
I don't
I don't want this to come off like fucking There Will Be Blood.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like, oh, this guy's sheer grit and determination. You know, other guys broke their back in the bottom of their fucking claim, but this guy clawed himself out, and thus you can see him drink everyone's milkshake. And I mean, there's this movie would have to express that, like, yes, there is definitely hard work, there's definitely time investment, but there is so much luck, I feel.
Yeah,
so much fucking luck. If I look back, I just see, like, all these smoking craters and blind cliffs and treacherous waterfalls that, like, half of them I definitely navigated, half of them I didn't even know they were there until I was halfway down falling through them, and mm-hmm. like, I just got so fucking lucky, as I think anyone that gets any kind of measure of success, that secret sauce is the hard work, the time, and also just you gotta get lucky. So the movie's gotta preach that too. What people would from both your lives would have to be in it? Parents, close friends, Jehovah's Witnesses, old bosses. I mean, okay. If you're telling our childhood, there's a few JWs that have to be there. You got to have the Orfmeister. You got to have Peter Street. You got to have the Laugh Man. You got to have Ass Cheek. You got to have your brother. You got to have the Gambler as the villain. my mom and dad for sure. Your dad and mom, I think, for sure. I would fucking love to cast your dad. I don't know who I'd cast for it.
Robert De Niro.
Well, it's like that's the thing. Is like when I was like casting people, I was thinking like, oh man, like I'm not just casting this person. I'm casting this person like in a particular time of their career, right? Mm-hmm. Whereas like if I just did, like just do an open casting call for your dad, like okay, we need a whole bunch of like
talking.
Yep. Vaguely Italian gentleman from some borough of New York.
Mm-hmm.
And he has to have a motor mouth. Like, it'd be a lot of fun. It'd be a lot of fun. Do you have any ideas, like, for people that would play? I'm terrible at casting people. Do you have any, like, particular, like, people that you want to cast as yourself? Your parent? Do you have you had Robert De Niro for your dad.
Yeah.
Kathy Bates, like, Misery era Kathy Bates, Titanic era Kathy Bates from my mom. That's always been like yeah, if I had central casting my movie, that'd be a lock for sure.
I'm hoping I could get away with Leonardo DiCaprio playing me. That'd be pretty excellent.
Sure, why not? Why not?
Who do you get to play the Laugh Man?
I don't know.
This can't be interesting.
Yeah,
these people. Yeah, this
soundtrack. Thoughts on soundtrack?
The tracks from our top 10 favorite albums. Yeah,
sure. And then thoughts on title? I think To Baldly Go.
Mm.
I like that because it kind of gives honors the bald move name and our love for Star Trek. That's what I got.
It's good.
All right, we'll have better answers for you when you come out next week, Fern. Graham. What would be the worst? Wait, no, it's your turn. Yeah, I read a million.
Oh, Graham, what would be the worst thing to have 50 million of?
Fibrous cysts.
Jesus.
not cancerous or two. Just mm-hmm. They're just there. Fibrous cysts. Yep. Body full of gristle.
Dollars worth of bail.
Dollars worth of bail?
$50 million of bail.
That you have to pay, yeah,
right?
Yeah, yeah, that'd be a lot. That'd be no good. Be no good.
It would mean so much more than just the $50 million. What the fuck did I do?
Yeah,
what did I do to get $50 million bail?
That's flirting with cruel and unusual too. Like you really fucked up, man. Noel, do you guys wash your legs when you take a shower?
Depends on how I'm feeling.
Day in, day out, I don't wash my legs.
If I'm feeling good,
yeah.
If I'm feeling like average to good,
yeah,
to great even,
yeah,
I'll wash my legs. If I'm feeling then those legs are not getting washed. Look, they're the furthest thing from anyone who's having a conversation with me. If they smell a little funky,
plus,
no one notices.
They're just being washed the entire shower.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
The entire shower is just doing nothing but carrying soapy water over those parts. They're the things that get the cleanest just by byproduct. Now, I will say that if I'm coming in from mowing a lawn or going on a hike and I'm like really sweaty, I do then soap up head, you know, tippy toe. Yeah. But yeah, like I'll wash my feet on a daily basis, but my legs, they're the least dirty part of my body. Gotta be. And I'm not,
yeah,
I'm not eating with them.
Sounds about right.
No one's shaking them. They're not touching them. Like, yeah. So I guess that makes me gross.
That's the least offensive part to not wash.
Sure. Like, what's a person doing there to my kneecap smelling?
Yeah. Yeah.
Feeling like, this guy's got the greasiest fucking kneecaps in the world. Well, how are you supposed to pull off those risky business slides if you don't have greasy knees, I ask you?
Business slides. Huh. All right. Eric says, what's your favorite single episode of a podcast? And then follows it up with, it was the Lori Fiesta, wasn't it?
That is a good podcast.
It's a very good one.
That's a memorable moment.
I came up with Willy Wonka. I think that was an excellent... Or it's Charlie and the Chocolate Factory or whatever the hell it's called.
Yeah.
But that was a really good, really fun podcast.
What the fuck is this? These grandparents are bedridden and Will and Charlie is seen as kind of a saint by doing this paperboy routine and giving his money to his grandparents and his mom to help him.
Yeah, Grandpa is despicable. He's easily the worst character in the film.
He kind of is.
Because clearly, this is a ruse that he's been keeping up for years, right?
There's no other way to look at it.
It started as, Grandpa, help out with the yard work. Well, I'm not feeling so good.
Right.
You know, my legs just aren't what they used
to
be.
It's the gout.
Grandpa, come do dishes. Oh, I can't get out of bed. I just can't do it. And then 20 years on, he's still keeping up the ruse until he finds this golden ticket. Until Charlie finds this golden ticket and feels so bad for his bedridden grandfather that he wishes he could come, and Grandpa springs out of bed.
Yeah.
Magically healed by the thought of endless candy. Although you notice something in the Chocolate Factory when he's got his hands on Charlie's shoulders, it may be a contributing factor.
Grandpa, dual Coke nails on his pinkies. Look at the scene where there's a scene where they're all standing together and he's got his hands on his shoulders, close up on Charlie's factory. Grandpa's rocking two Carrie Fisher-style Coke nails. And I think that's
what got him out of bed.
That's the golden ticket for Grandpa. I've got, like, three. I think the Days and Nights of Apes pitch on Quit Your Pitching might be the favorite thing I've ever recorded. Jane Goodall has been secretly running a slave, like
oh Jesus.
Apes
okay.
just aren't smarter than are commonly known. They're like really smart. They can be taught basic stitching patterns and fabrication manufacturing techniques, and she is running an underground, a literal underground ape slave ring. And she's using her study of chimpanzees as a front. And the key thing that you find out, like in the, like there's a whole bunch of establishing shots of like the underground, you know, underground ape farm in Nairobi. And it's like all established with like military font over everything. Everything's slightly like interlaced screen, like you're in a spy cam looking. And it shows Jane Goodall, like, you know, greeting people to her ape research facility. And she's smiling, but then she like gets serious and looks off in the distance. And you see a team in America planning a woman, and they're taking a dwarf actor, crisis actor, and they're dressing him as a child, and they're going to throw him into the pen of one Harambe. Former king of the Cincinnati Zoo, and they're going to gin up, they're going to engineer his death because Harambe knew the truth. Harambe had heard through the ape vine. He heard it through the ape vine, Jim. And he was about to blow the stack off of this, and he was silenced. That's the establishing shot, and it fades into Days and Nights of Apes. That's episode 2, season 2, episode 8, if you're keeping track of school. I think we're going to have some clips of this, if we can track them down. There was also this Game of Thrones episode, I think in season 6, where one of these emailers just emailed in randomly about the uselessness of Bran Stark's legs and how they're having to drag him around and, you know, they should just amputate those. And I think he suggested maybe it could also be used as emergency food.
And taking his arms or so. There was like, an implication that his arms were also useless because his legs were.
Yeah. And like, we just went like, okay, you just pare him down till he's just like a stump. And it just really tickled us. That was a lot of fun. And then I think as far as you shining, the whole Reg's cold rolled steel bit, from I think Walking Dead season Reg. 6.
Yeah.
Maybe it was 5B. Is the first when they first meet Alexander and they made this big deal about this cold rolled steel fucking fencing, and we used to do these skits where I had a really terrible Rick Grimes accent and you had a pretty good, I thought, Norman Reedus accent. And then you had like just it wasn't particularly accurate, but it was just a funny characterization of Reg, the city engineer. Yeah.
That was good times.
Andrew asks, of all the shows you've covered, which was your favorite show to cover? Not your favorite show, but which pod did you two have the most fun doing?
Overall, I can, and some people might not even know that we covered this because we didn't cover it as our typical personas. It's Riverdale. Fuck.
Yes.
I had so much fun producing that Riverdale
podcast.
Explain this,
because you're right. A lot of people don't know about this.
So in season 1 of Riverdale, when it was coming on air, we decided we were going to play a joke. Because Riverdale's not a show that we would really watch.
Uh-huh.
But we were like, wouldn't it be fun to just do a troll podcast on the Riverdale fans? So we started a show. We watched the first episode. And we covered that episode to hook people.
Kind of like a standard Bald Move episode, but we had pseudonyms.
Yeah, we were Al and Joe. I was Al, you were Joe.
We had a brand new feed that was not connected to Bald Move in any way.
Mm-hmm.
We did tell our club members in the super secret area of our forums so that we could have people rate us positively.
Yeah, we said go review this show on iTunes. We'll get to the top of the charts for Riverdale. People will tune in.
This is to help set the hook, okay?
Right. And it also enabled us to do a companion podcast called Har Har Riverdale, where we talked about the trolls every week
that we were
pulling. And every single week from week one on, it got more and more elaborate to where the whole point of the show was we were just going to watch the previously on and the next time on segments and then extrapolate from those what happened on the episode and talk about that as if we had actually watched the episode.
Right. And if anyone emailed us to correct us, we would be, I'm pretty sure you missed the scene where, and we just make stuff up. Yeah. And
it was glorious. And every single week it got progressively more absurd.
Yeah.
With our proclamations, because we got further and further from the actual thread of the episode.
And every once in a while, like previously on, would kind of course correct because like, shit, this person died. We got to stop talking about them or something like that. Yeah.
And then we just wanted to have fun with it. And by the end of it, so we did.
Because we also build ourselves as big, like unironic Archie and Veronica fans, right?
Yes. Yeah. With all the spinoff comic books.
Yeah. We did a bunch of really did like Bald Move levels of research to sell this. Like, this is going to be the definitive Riverdale podcast from Al and Joe.
And that was great, but there was also just like by week 6 or 7 or something, we were kind of like, okay, what do we do with this thing? And so eventually we just turned it into a full-on troll. Like the podcast itself became bad. We sort of played it as if like we are first-time podcasters making first-time podcaster mistakes. So we'd put like a lot of preamble up front. One week I put in, I read a bunch of reviews. I read like some of the top reviews from iTunes.
Yeah.
And then the following week I was like, I forget exactly how I pitched it, but I ended up reading about 10 times more reviews and I put music behind them.
Uh-huh.
I made a huge production out of it the next week after people complained about it.
Uh-huh.
And then we got to the last episode and we're like, oh, we're so excited for the finale.
Oh, we also got new sound equipment.
which made it sound worse.
But we got like these like condenser mics that are super sensitive out. We cranked up the gain so it sounded like we were podcasting. Like, oh, we got these really expensive mics, and like you could hear us touching the table.
Yep.
And
yep.
Oh god, because that's something that every first time podcaster is going to do.
You think more money is it means better sound?
No, when really it just makes all of your mistakes that much more noticeable.
Exactly. Yeah. And so for the final episode, we decided not to release an episode because this is a classic podcaster thing. They fade, right?
Late. We had a scheduling conflict.
We
Joe
will
was
get
sick.
To this. We promise we will get to this next week.
We'll have it out next week, and then we just ghosted.
Yeah.
Because that's also a totally first-time podcaster thing to do.
Yeah. It was pretty glorious, and the accompanying Har Har Riverdale podcast was also fun to record.
That was fun. I think that my favorite podcast we've ever done was The Leftovers.
If you want to go for serious, that was a hell of a show.
I think True Detective season one's up there. Like The Walking Dead, probably the most fun we've ever had because there's just never been that show that for a long time straddled there's absurd things happening, but also the cast is really good and some of the early seasons are good enough that you still cared bizarrely about these characters and it wasn't just a sheer like week in week out hate. Mm-hmm. You could also praise it like, oh, they actually, this one storyline, they actually did a fucking good job on. And they kept that going for longer than you'd think it was possible until it snapped. I think some of our earlier podcasts, like the first season of Breaking Bad.
Yeah.
Where we just didn't even know what the fuck we were doing and it was a part-time job and we were singular, like the whole week I just bathe in Breaking Bad and like read all the feedback and read every review and
doing news posts.
Yeah,
we were
doing daily news posts where you could just like devote that much time to a singular show and it was all new and the traffic was like fun, so there's like tons of people to talk to, but it wasn't like overwhelmed. You weren't getting like thousands of messages a week. That was a real fun era too because there weren't a lot of stakes and it was just, you know, nothing you could do could like fucking ruin your life the way you can now if I guess you did a wrong step here or there.
Is that,
I think it's your turn now.
My turn. Josh, what is the most perfect TV series ever and why is it The Leftovers? It's because of the writing, but also it's still Breaking Bad.
The Leftovers is my favorite show now. It narrowly edged out The Wire. If you want to add like, because that's the thing is like, even if you add importance, you know, I think a lot of stuff that The Leftovers did and a lot of things they're saying about like depression and grief are important for us dealing with our 21st century life. So like, I don't even know that you can, I mean, for sure, like David Simon's like show can change your politics if you let it, but like The Leftovers was just some next level shit, man. That's it's going to be real tough to dethrone that one because I never thought that The Wire would ever get dethroned. And it's not like it's not a massive advantage. It's just that there's, you know, just like a perfect three seasons, whereas The Wire has like four perfect seasons and then a weird coda that they appended on to the end of it. That's still good. But, yeah, Leftovers is amazing. Michelle asks, over the last 50 million downloads, what has been your favorite Bald Move memory or favorite episode of a podcast that you've done? # Bald Move for life. Well, thank you, Michelle.
I think it's a testament to Bald Move and its relationship to my life that these moments are still happening.
Yeah.
'Cause the one that immediately came to mind was this last Groundhog Day marathon when Mark Hamill tweeted about us doing the marathon.
Yeah.
But it doesn't end there. Like, it was the perfect moment, and then you accidentally put the computer to sleep right after we realized it.
It was
just like this perfect storm of glory and like
also these people are idiots.
It was perfect. Like, looking back on it, I was pulling my hair out going, oh my god, we're gonna squander what could be the opportunity of a lifetime. But looking back on it, it is one of the funniest things that has ever happened. One of the greatest moments.
It was really
both
cool.
Gratifying and hilarious. I loved it.
And like, you know, just like being able to show my son that, because, you know, he's big into Star Wars and that, you know, he loves Luke Skywalker, and Mark Hamill giving us that acknowledgement was really cool. The Groundhog Day marathons have been really cool that we've done the last 2 years. I'm going to go with a couple years back, the Save Bald Move campaign.
Oh,
yeah. Where like we got our funding pulled from, speaking of our multiple legs of income, we got our one of our legs kicked out from underneath us, the Amazon affiliate, which was a lot of money for us back in the day. We got our affiliate status canceled, and it kind of started, we had kind of got to a place where we were making it and we're not worried, and that instantly threw us into, oh, we're going to go bankrupt. Like, we're actually not going to be able to pay the bills past February. And I think this was like November when this all went down. Mm-hmm. So we did like, hey, we need to raise like 25 grand or we're probably going to, the business will probably collapse, you know, sometime next spring. And we ended up raising like 40,000, and that right there, that, you know, we did a lot of changes to the club and we did a lot of structural changes and we got some more revenue streams going on. But like that right there is more than anything responsible for the fact that we're still doing this.
Yeah.
Like, we had a cushion that the people that love us online gave us, because that could have wiped us out. That could have sent us back to our day jobs. You know, not even, I wouldn't even have felt defeated. I'd have been like, Jesus, like, look, we did all this stuff. And now it's like a fun story I can tell in the break room. But the Bald Move campaign, yeah, that was a very moving, powerful experience, which we've talked about a bunch. But that's definitely probably the number one move moment for me.
All right. Sean asks, why isn't that other guy bald? I think he's talking about me.
Superior genetics.
Yes, luck of the draw, everyone. I highly suggest you try it out.
Yeah, get good genes and avoid the bad ones.
Yeah,
whatever you do. Tall's cast. How does it feel to have more downloads than our Jehovah's Witnesses active in the world?
Is that true?
Oh yeah, there's like, can't be more than 10 million of them.
Yeah,
5 times more popular.
That's awesome.
But then, you know, Jehovah's Witnesses be deferred to tell you that's by design. They're on a crooked, narrow path. There's broad true. And spacious is the path that leads to Bald Move. Crooked and narrow and cramped is the path that leads to righteousness. So they would not be phased at the least, I promise you. Is it your turn?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Snorlax says, how did you meet your significant others? And what was your first date?
I met Cecily on OkCupid.
Oh, you're stealing my thunder.
And she caught my eye because she's ridiculously tall. She's like 6'1", and she's got like the most piercing blue eyes you've ever seen. We were like a 94% compatible match, which I was fucking crazy. And her profile was hilarious. And we met at a Italian restaurant in Indianapolis called the Italian Gardens, which we were heartbroken to find out like 2 years ago is closed. We went back to like have like a significant anniversary there. It was going to be like kind of a fun thing. And we got there and it like closed 6 months before. So yeah, that's how, and you know, it was a long winding path from there to us getting, you know, moving to Ohio and getting married. And, but it's worked out.
I also met my girlfriend on OkCupid, cause that was kind of the hot dating app. When I was of dating age, now it's like fucking Tinder and I don't know.
There's so probably literally some other ones. It's fucking Tinder. That's fucking the Tinder. The Tinder Plus.
Yeah.
Fucking
that's
Tinder.
What the premium account is called. So yeah, we met on OkCupid and we went to the old Kentucky Bourbon Bar in Covington and we spent the night drinking and looking at the patrons and making up stories about what they were doing there. And it was fun. It was a lot of fun. And she stayed out well past her bedtime. Mm. She had to go to work at like 7 a.m. the next day and stayed out till midnight.
Holy shit.
Yep.
Real pumpkin turning potential, staying out past midnight.
I know. She risked it, though.
Mm-hmm.
Here we are, X amount of years later. I don't even know. We were just talking about this the other day, how we bought a house almost 2 years ago now. It feels like it's been a month.
Did you guys happen, because this is something, Cecily and I literally don't know when our first date was.
I can neither probably, of us I know it was cold. It was freezing fucking cold.
I can tell you the month and like the year, but I couldn't like tell December. You the exact date. Yeah, it was, I think it was late November. or like early December.
Years just bleed together now.
But yeah, like we
I
don't.
Think it's
like,
been four.
So we observe our what we call the move anniversary when the date she moved in with us.
Okay,
that's yeah. like our kind of like that's, and then we have our obviously our actual wedding anniversary now.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that was the thing is because yeah, I didn't like I tried to like. When we got back together, I got on my OkCupid profile, which I know is dangerous when you just get back together with somebody. But I was trying to go through my email messages to try to figure out like when our first email exchange was, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And like, I guess they auto archive stuff after a certain amount of time. So like all that shit was gone.
Yeah.
So I'm like, whatever. And I checked the singles available in my area and they still weren't better than Cecily. And I closed out the account. Related question from Michael. Any chance Jim's girlfriend will make an appearance?
It's not out of the question, but it's kind of up to her. She has a lot of social anxiety, I think, but also a desire to podcast.
Podcasts are perfect for antisocial people.
You think so?
Yeah.
They can just talk to their friends and pretend no one's listening?
Yeah, that's kind of what you do.
That's not how it was for me at first. I was very aware that people were going to hear everything I was saying.
No, I mean, that's...
Now I just don't care.
Right.
Now it's like, they've heard... they've heard the worst of anything I will ever say.
Sure.
So it is what it is. But yeah, it's up to her. We'll see. Henry says, regarding your tabletop RPG experiences, is there any memorable stories or moments you have from playing Star Wars D20, D&D, or any other type of role-playing system? I don't have
I have
many
a pretty
of these,
funny. So I ran a campaign for some of our JW friends. Among them was Ass Cheek, Loffman, and the Orfmeister. The anything interesting about the Mighty Mighty Orfbot is that he was really developmentally disabled. I don't know. I don't know exactly what his diagnosis is. He probably never got a diagnosis. He kind of was like looked after by the whole congregation because his mom was a bit of a. I'm not sure what her damage was either, but maybe it's all related. But he was very cognitively impaired. He's like maybe a couple notches below like a Forrest Gump type character. But like he could, you know, if someone was looking after him, he could live independently and, you know, he could drive a car and hold down a job. But it's just like, you know, there's always like unintentionally hilarious moments. There's also just like truly tragic moments. But every once in a while he would shine in like a video game situation or... board game situation, and there's this one part of the campaign where, like, several sessions ago, he had pocketed this, like, level one spacesuit that was, like, rummaging around, and, like, I just had, like, a random list of, like, gear for when people would rummage around, and he decided to pocket the spacesuit. And, like, I don't know, like, 2 months later, we were doing this thing where they had, they're in a Nebulon B frigate. You know, those are the ones that like a big kind of like shark fin looking thing with a little tiny skinny spine with like a big engine unit.
Yeah.
And the whole set piece was there was these like separatists that had taken over the engine room and like had kind of commandeered it. And they had like set all these elaborate barricade system along that spine. So you'd have to fight to get back control of the thing. And I'm like, this is going to be a set piece for it. Orfer, fucking Orfer out of nowhere,
whips
grabbed that
spacesuit
out of his back,
whoop.
Cut a hole through an airlock, walked outside, and he was the one Jedi in the party because, you know, whatever, he's the Orfbot. And fucking came up from behind, snuck up and butt-fucked the entire opposition and, like, single-handedly beast-moded it. And it's like... As it was happening, like, this is kind of ruining the encounter, but it's also, like, one of those things that everyone's going to always remember, so... Yeah. There you go. I don't know what you're doing now, Orf, or where you're at, but I hope you're well.
I feel like I have a similarly game-breaking moment from a BiPax where we tried to do like a one-off D&D thing. And I ended up, there was this camp of like goblins or something, and they were all asleep in their tents.
I was here for this one,
And I fucking... I decided, well, I guess I'm going to go try and sneak in there.
Because you
were
like a rogue, some kind of
thievish
rogue.
Yeah, I was a very
rogue.
Sneaky character. And so I snuck into the tents, and I just started executing them one
slitting
by one.
Slitting their throats.
Like rolling crit over
you
crit
were.
After crit after. And I kept feeling like I am breaking Eric's game, but this is too funny not to stop here.
Yeah, yeah.
And so I ended up clearing that entire tent full of goblins in a single move. It
you
was,
rolled like 4 or 5 natural 20s or like all 20s and 19s on that attempt. It was amazing.
It was crazy.
It's also like one of those things where like if you... It was a meta moment too because like... you're like the angel of death after that. It's like the whole party is like, this person just murdered five people, like gurgling
and
in their
none
tents.
Of them could really see what was happening because I was the only one in the tent. So I just come out and everyone's dead. And it's
soaked
like
in blood and there's all this.
Yeah, it's like the door's opening up and River Tam standing there with a bunch of reavers, right? It's like,
yeah.
The fuck?
James wants to know, what past shows do you wish you could have covered? And any ones you thought about doing a group rewatch and covering? Any chance you go back and cover seasons one or two of The Expanse? Oh, man, there's a lot of, like, shows I wish, you know, like, I always think of X-Files and Lost.
Yeah, Lost is number one for me.
Like Star Trek The Next Generation would have been super fun. Like, as, like, if I could go back as an adult with a podcast to do that, that would be really, because, like, all, one of the other one of my guilty pleasures I don't think I listed is, like, watching old Star Trek stuff. Like, if I got nothing else to do, I'll just put on one of those. And, man, like, as I'm watching it sometimes, like, I wish we did a podcast on this because I've got a hilarious take about this fucked up situation that's going on right in front of me. But yeah, I think Lost and X-Files are the two, like, boy, what if there was podcasts and we had been podcasting that early on that stuff?
So there was definitely podcasts on Lost. I listened to one. Jay and Jack kind of got me hooked on the whole podcasting thing
right
in the first place. It's weird, though, because I think if we were covering Lost, I can't remember what year it came out, like 2004 or something. I mean, no, earlier than that, right? 2002, maybe?
I don't know.
It's been a long-ass time. But that was a few years before we were even beginning a podcast,
2004
right?
is when it premiered, September 2004.
Yeah, so if we had started podcasting in 2004 and like 6 years before we actually did start podcasting, I can't help but think like, podcasting wasn't as big of a thing. The money wasn't there yet.
Right.
Eventually, we probably would have just folded it up because we got tired of podcasting.
Right.
Before we ever saw the opportunities that lay ahead of us, which we did with like Breaking Bad.
Because we were about to stop podcasting. We thought at the time you had gone to Chicago, come back, and you were living with me. Mm-hmm. And it was kind of like our routine that we would watch like something on AMC and we'd sit on the couch and talk about it afterwards. And we're like, fuck it, let's just like do one of these types of conversations and see where it goes for one season. And we did have Breaking Bad, and you know, the it was like 40 times more successful than our most successful podcast before that. And we're like, fuck, let's do this.
But we were able to roll that into other shows. I'm thinking like, you know, if Lost had been there, but like the other shows weren't
there.
There's
nothing to roll into, right?
Yeah, because there was a pretty decent gap between like when Lost.
We could have done like Oz and Sopranos. There was other.
Would anybody have listened to a podcast on those? Right, that's the thing.
That's
like
a good question.
Lost people were listening to podcasts on that,
but Sopranos people Oz with Oz. Sopranos? Yeah,
I doubt it. Like I didn't know of any, so we might have just gotten disillusioned with the whole thing, or just tired of it for you know podcasting for 6 years to get to 2010. When podcasting started to become like a real thing, when Bald Move started podcasting and podcasting gained legitimacy.
as far as this question about rewatching, I think if you want us to go back and do some classic shows like Mad Men or The Wire, like pray for a Hollywood writer strike. Because if there was like a lengthy, like 3 to 6 month strike where it was just reality television 24/7, I think to try to eke out an existence, we would go back and do those things. I think that in those circumstances, they'd actually be pretty popular. But otherwise, like they're less popular than almost anything else we could be doing that's like live and current. The exception might be The Expanse. Like if The Expanse turns into like even a fifth of what Game of Thrones was at its height, then I would love to go back and recover those, do stuff on the books, all kinds of things. But we'll just because like The Expanse last year was a very low rated podcast, very low rated show. So I'm hoping that now the word of mouth is out and it got buzz for being on Amazon, it's going to be a little bit more adult maybe. It doesn't
when you say low rated, you just mean the ratings for the show were low, not
like
it
there was
poorly reviewed.
It was very well reviewed. The ratings as far as like the audience ratings, like you know there wasn't a lot of
the
people
number
the
of
podcast
people watching
or, but like if I look at the Expanse subreddit, it had like 17,000 people like starting last season. It has just under 100,000 now, I think. Like it's grown, like the fandom's grown huge. Like it being canceled and the uproar about it and it's being swiftly saved like was a huge you know, if I didn't know better, I would say Bezos did it as like a publicity stunt. because it got a lot of people watching it. So I hope big things are ahead for Expanse, because it's kind of one of the returning shows I'm the most excited about now.
I also wish I could have covered the final season of Halt and Catch Fire.
Mm.
Eric and I did season 3, and that was a ton of fun. We had, you know, a bunch of good conversations about it and came up with some fun gimmicks like the Tandy Shandy.
Yeah.
That stuff was fun, and we just couldn't make it happen for season 4. So, oh well. My turn?
Yes.
Laura says, what can we do to convince you to cover Walking Dead again? Your pods were so funny. I came up with an ultimatum for myself.
Okay.
If The Walking Dead can raise its Rotten Tomato score for 2 years in a row, we'll come back.
Okay. So when the sun...
I want a track record
when the sun
here, right?
Sets in the east and rises in the west, when the...
Look, I'm propping the door open for them. I can't drag them through it.
I will say this. I think one of my biggest regrets in the last 12 months was stopping Walking. Now, we had no way of knowing this.
Yeah, it's a shit show right up until the moment we quit it.
Season 9A, I don't know about 9B because I didn't watch that, but 9A was one of the more consistently entertaining, for the right reasons, seasons of of Walking Dead I'd seen since, like, the prison arc. Like, it was a return to form, but again, we had no way of knowing that, and I also don't know whether they'll be able to sustain that.
Yeah.
Because they lost a lot more people, and I don't know, but pray for a writer's strike and then a real life zombie apocalypse to break out, it might happen there, Laura. Eric, do you guys do a podcast for Killing Eve? No, but after discovering Phoebe Waller-Bridge on the marathon I just did of Fleabag, I want to go back and see season 1. I just saw that, like, Alan Sepinwall, a person whose opinion about television I respect a lot, said that, like, Phoebe Waller-Bridge left the show after the end of season 1, and season 2 is kind of a mess. But I got to see that season 1 of Killing Eve. I'm obsessed with Phoebe Waller-Bridge right now.
All right, Ouchie Dumpling says, will you please, please, please do a watch of The Last Kingdom on Netflix? George R. R. Martin gives it rave reviews.
You got that time to watch television, George? What the hell?
Yeah, what's he doing watching The Last Kingdom?
Chris Pine, Last Kingdom, right?
Oh, is that what it is?
I think it is.
I don't know.
I know of only one kingdom on Netflix, and that's The Kingdom.
Mm.
And it's enough kingdom for me.
Yeah. We're not making any promises on coverage here.
Yeah. Amy, currently listening through all of your American Horror Story podcast. It's comical when you and Cecily start throwing around predictions early that end up being right. This brings me to my question. Aaron, when are you going to watch through Murder House? Last season, I watched through Asylum and Murder House. So I have seen all of American Horror Story podcasts. All you fucking one-star reviewers on iTunes can fucking up. I'm sure you'll update your review now that
I have
vitally seen the two pieces of the anthology that I hadn't seen before.
Come back and provide a fair review.
No, that's a lot of fun. I've always got a soft spot for American Horror Story podcasts because it's the one show that Cecily and I have done that we haven't been able to kill. And we've got a pretty nice fan group built over there, and some nice memes and a nice routine and chemistry. It's a lot of fun. I'm looking forward to it coming back for 5 more seasons. Sure.
All right, Ben. How come you haven't covered? I'm assuming this is Marvelous Miss Maisel.
Yes,
Mrs. Maisel. I don't even know the name of this. It's too alliterative. Which is like Mad Men meets Gilmore Girls. Or Good Girls, which is like Breaking Bad, but with Christine Hendricks as Walter White.
I haven't even heard of Good Girls. The Marvelous Miss Maisel,
Didn't we watch an accidental season 2
trailer
for,
I think so,
for Good Girls?
Because we're like, God, this cast looks loaded.
Yeah, and we thought it was season 1, and we were like, we're going to check that out. And we found out it was season 2 and said, nope.
Yeah, you can't really jump in. I mean, that's the thing. Like, we have a crippling load of television to cover.
Yeah.
And a lot of times, like right now, we're kind of in a little bit of a drought, but that's because we looked ahead at the schedule, and like if we picked up something here or there, like for long form coverage, we would be then doing four shows by the end of June. So, honestly, the reason I didn't do the Marvelous Miss Maisel is I think that title is terrible. I honestly thought it was a children's show. I thought it was like some kind of like Mary Poppins thing. And I have since been proven wrong, and I've heard it's really good. And you're right. That's one of the things I want to watch, but I keep finding other things. Like I discovered Fleabag, and I had to go through the first whole season and watch season two. Like everything, and then like I every time I got an opening of television, something jumps in, like the Deadwood movie. I got to try to cram as much Deadwood as I can, and just it's really tough. Now this year, we've started this thing where we do this Bald Move TV prep, where we try to, as best of our ability, look at everything, trailers of everything that are coming out this week in television, and then try to see the things that are the most interesting, the things we think are going to be the most popular, and watch and cover those on Bald Move TV. But it's just tough. And if something's got more than one or two seasons out, like jumping into it is tough. Like, how do you do it?
Yeah, no, it's all about timing and interest level. And when those things line up, they get shows, they get podcasts. When they don't, they don't.
Mm-hmm. Related, Polly wants to know, any chance you guys do a Luther podcast? It's a good show. I love Idris Elba.
Yeah, timing and interest, though. It just
Luther
the timing
looks
is never
super cool, but it's an intimidating show to jump in at this point.
Yeah, it's also getting old.
Yeah.
All right, Corey, did you guys do a podcast for The Wire by any chance? I'm rewatching the series and would love to listen. Kinda. We have an Omar Cummin trilogy.
Yeah. Did for a commission podcast a while back.
Yeah. That's about as deep as we've dug into The Wire in podcast form.
It's so funny because my respect for The Wire is what killed The Wire podcast, because if we had in the early days of Bald Move, before we had kind of gotten too busy for our own good, done like just a conventional podcast on The Wire, we probably could have gotten it done. But I had this in mind of doing like a super plussed, getting some celebrity commentators, doing interviews with cast and crew, and was working on like building those established relationships and stuff. And that took so much time that by the time I was ready to start executing, I was far too busy to contemplate. And I also, the other thing that was the bullet is going back and doing like catch up seasons of the Breaking Bad. Those were kind of like,
yeah,
they didn't do great as far as the numbers. And that's like, Jesus Christ, Breaking Bad was just a show. We had literally did that like immediately after Breaking Bad, I think, went off the air, didn't we? And it was in between like Better Call Saul, so it wasn't like completely irrelevant,
right?
And it landed like a lead balloon, so that kind of also scared me, like, oh, spending that much time and effort on something that might not even pay off. Oof. Andrew wants to know, what new shows are you guys planning to cover? I mean, the big one this year is Watchmen.
Yep.
I'm very excited about that. I am a big fan of the comic series. I'm a big fan of the movie. I'm a big fan of Damon Lindelof and what he did with The Leftovers. And I think the trailers are just like off the charts, interesting and cool looking. That of all the new shows, that's the one I'm probably the most excited for.
Oh yeah, easily. I think we were talking about doing some kind of coverage of His Dark Materials as well. Mm-hmm. Not sure if that'll be like a full podcast kind of thing, but who knows? Watchmen definitely will be. It'll have its own dedicated podcast feed, and it'll have, you know, the full recap and all the coverage we give to our more serious coverage of shows.
I will say that also something we're probably not going to cover, except for maybe a throwaway thing on the HBO, is The Righteous Gemstones, this comedy series coming out on HBO starring John Goodman, Danny McBride.
God, I hate Danny McBride so much.
The guy, you do?
Yeah, I hate. He's perhaps worse than Adam Sandler in my mind.
He's also got Adam Devine, who, you know, I can take in small doses, but he looks like he's being. It's about a family of televangelists, and it just looks like, ooh, so good. I'm looking forward to that, but that won't be obviously weekly coverage. That'll just be funsies.
Yeah. Michael asks, any plans on making a Bald Move trip to California? Bald Move meet up at the new Star Wars land at Disneyland? Man, I've seen pictures of that.
Yeah,
it looks so fucking cool.
I can't wait for Jenny Nicholson to make like a 3-fucking-hour documentary about her attending, because I just keeping up with it on our Twitter feed was thrilling.
Is that the most involved land that they've done?
I haven't been, because like the other one that gets mentioned a lot is like Harry Potter.
Okay.
That being there like on their Diagon Alley feels like that kind of amazing, but like, man, you see like their most Eisley cantina, mm-hmm. and like the life size walkers and Millennium Falcons and shit. Yep. Like it, you know, it's one of the biggest regrets of my life that I never made it out to Vegas when they had the Star Trek experience where you could go to Quark's mm-hmm. Bar and do all that. Like, because that's like, you know, if you're a fan, you don't. I don't know. I definitely want to get out there and see it for sure. Probably not like in the next year, let some of that shit die down. But because I guess the lines are just true. Like, you can't even get in Mos Eisley. The cantina, forget about it.
Even the fast pass?
Even the fast pass. Oh, like, and like, it's like a 90-minute wait to build a saber. There's like tons of things.
How about the fucking fast pass?
The fucking fast pass?
The ultra premium.
You know, if you know how to get one, you need not ask kind of situation. But yeah, if we have had on the books for like the last year or two some kind of like traveling roadshow that takes us to like the big media markets, and one of these days we'll execute on that. And California is for sure a place we would go to. Like California, New York, Dallas, Fort Worth, Chicago. Like, you guys don't sweat. You know, like, there will be something going down in LA or San Francisco. And then that's the thing that always is funny to me. It's like, if we're going to be in Seattle, like a Portland person would be like, when are you going to come to Portland? My motherfucker, drive. I flew for what felt like 4 days to get to Seattle. You can hop the ferry and spend 3 hours to get over here. It's like, it ain't getting any closer. You know, so like when we do come out, like try to, because like that's the thing is like, if we do this and like if we take the time and expense to do it and like the shows don't sell out, we'll never do it again.
Yeah.
So if we ever do announce it, not put any pressure on it. Yeah. But if you don't buy a ticket, you literally are voting against future live competitive shows.
Yeah. And we're booking the 2000 seat theater. So better show up.
Yeah.
In
some
numbers.
Stadiums. I mean, we need to find 17,000.
We're at least
fans in Anaheim.
At least as big as Live Aid. Come on.
Yeah. Or what are we even doing here? Todd, how many hours a week do you guys put in your podcast and network?
I've lost count. This is not a number of hours game. This is a lifestyle.
Yes.
Like it's very much, I live Bald Move constantly. Yes. If I'm not actively doing something that I need to do to prep for the week or actively recording a podcast, I am thinking about Bald Move. I've got emails I do in the evenings. I do all my watching in the evenings. I'm thinking about like what new club features, what new content stuff, like finances.
I'm married to an employee, so it literally never stops.
Yeah, this is not a job, it's a lifestyle.
Yeah, and there's cool things about that. There's not so cool things about that. It does sometimes feel like it can get easy to be overwhelmed. It's easy to get overworked. It's easy to overcommit, and then you get into it and like, oh, Jesus, what are we going to do? Stop this show that we've done for 3 years because we're going to have to work ourselves to death for like 3 weeks. It's a living. There's a question. That's what I'm saying. There's a question later on that kind of talks about the other side of that. But a lot. Like, you know, never less than 40, sometimes as high as 60 or 70. Like that time, like a couple, like last month when we switched our you guys probably don't even know this, but we made a huge infrastructure switch and right before Game of Thrones started. Mm-hmm. And God, I don't know how many hours you worked to get all those feeds.
They're still not all like as good as it could be.
Yeah.
Like, I still need to do work on that. But, yeah, I spent a couple of...
I feel
of...
like there was a 10-day stretch where every waking moment you spent working.
Yeah, and that was nothing, honestly, compared to last Christmas. Like, October, between Super Serious Film Fest and getting that thing off the ground and just getting into a flow with it and the Giamatti stuff.
Yeah. We put a lot of hours in that Paul Giamatti stuff, man.
You were doing paper mache heads on the fucking weekends and
slow-mo
blowing
green
shit up.
Explosive work.
Yeah. There are times. So that's the thing with this lifestyle. Mm-hmm. There are times where you work 100 hours a week, and then there are times where you work 30 hours a week because I just came off a 100-hour week. Like, I'm not going
to
do as much.
And there's weird stuff, like Jim goes to Italy for like 9 days, and like,
yeah,
I'm doing some stuff, but clearly that's a break for me because
I'm not podcasting.
And so there's some like mini vacations I feel like we've gotten, and vice versa.
But the weeks leading up to that, we're recording a bunch of shit.
We're doing 175% content so we could have stuff to drop in there. So, your turn.
What? Jamila.
This is going to be a 3-hour podcast, BT Dubs. I hope everyone's ready for it.
Nothing you can do. What is a typical day for you or general daily schedule as a podcaster? Do you always watch TV shows live? Do you always watch shows together? Do you miss The Walking Dead and Cold Rolled Steel? Yes, I do miss that, specifically that skit.
Coldest Rolled of Steel.
Yeah.
In North America.
Typical day for me is I wake up, I do my morning stuff, I get food, I come to the office and record whatever we got to record for that day. Mm-hmm. Then we tend to like get done a little bit before you need to leave, or we just need to leave because we got fucking dinner with our families. And then after that, I tend to spend like 9 to midnight, sometimes 2 or 3 in the morning, watching shit, doing emails, all the non like us stuff that I have to do, all of my kind of responsibilities for Bald Move.
Mm-hmm. Mine's the same, except for mine's time shifted differently. I've got a kid, and like during the school year, he, like this year especially, had to get up ridiculously early. Like I was getting up at like 10 after 5, 5:15, 5:20.
Shoot me.
And then because like you can't really do that and wake up at 9 o'clock the next day, I kind of kept that schedule year round. And so I get up somewhere between 7 and 8:30. Cecily goes to work somewhere between 8 and 9, and that's like my television watching time is early in the morning, and like, you know, following up on stuff. And then we typically on days where we're not recording anything, we meet at the office around 11, and our core business hours are kind of like 11 to 5, where we're doing stuff together. Like if it's like a recording day, like Game of Thrones, usually we don't start till 1 because we're spending that time in the morning, you know, watching the show, getting our notes together, compiling feedback in my case. So like the days we record like a main show type of content, usually we start like at 1. And then some nights, you know, we got a Bald Movie that doesn't get done until 9, 9:30, and we got to record a podcast. And those nights we're going till like midnight, or we got a Game of Thrones we got to come in to cover and do an instant take on, and we don't get home till like, a you know, midnight on those. So that's what I'm saying. Like it's I definitely feel like the best day of my week is like Saturday, because that's when like everything's kind of at an ebb, like the feedback, everything. Like it's pretty nonstop, round the clock kind of thing. But yeah, I mean, that's the thing, is just finding ways to like unplug from that every once in a while, or like as intensity in this area increases, like let some of the other thing kind of slide, which we might talk about. I think there's a question that kind of drills down to that later.
Definitely don't watch TV shows live all the time.
I typically do because Cecily likes to watch the TV with me, and she likes to get that first watch in, the all important first watch in. And since she's at the work during the day, then our routine is like we watch it the night it comes out, usually the first watch. So
I almost never do. I operate on a schedule that, unless a show comes out after 9 p.m. on a weekday that I don't have anything else that's more pressing.
Or if it's an instant take, obviously, that forces your hand.
Yeah. Instant takes, I obviously have to. But yeah, I just watch things whenever I get to them. More often than not, I watch things, unless it's like a serious, like Game of Thrones, like our shows that we devote specific coverage to, those things I'll watch 2-3 times days before, but we do the podcast. But typically I'm watching it like the night before we do the podcast, and then I'll get up in the morning and I'll sort of have it background on while I'm doing things, just to refresh my memory from the previous night.
Richard, where is Bald Move going to be in 5, 10, 20 years? Obviously, assuming all goes to plan, what does Bald Move look like in the future? This is where I don't know that we have a great answer.
Let me consult my premeditation here. pretty sure I don't have one. Oh, yeah, hopefully bigger and better. More people, better tech, more content.
I think that, like, if you look at where Penny Arcade is, that's kind of like we've always... that's my kind of barometer is like, where were they at like 6 years ago? That's kind of where we're at today. And I just don't know, because like they got, you know, they end up like Penny Arcade is like a huge concern now. They got this whole charity, Child's Play charity. They've got this successful trade conference that like people go there and have no idea even what Penny Arcade, what the PAX, the PA and PAX means. Like Jim, you know, you went to I don't know how many PAXes and didn't ever really were a fan of the comics. Yeah. So like where and you know, they started off where they had people and they hired like, you know, graphic artist here and a web developer here and a business guy there. And they to greater or less abilities kind of wove those people into other types of content and, you know, built some of their people. You know, they now they have like these weekly role-playing sessions on Twitch and they got various produced content and so I guess, yeah, like having more bodies in here to help us especially on the production side would be very nice. I think Jim would like to, I mean, the one thing that we haven't really figured out and we need to is that if, like the your probably biggest pain point is the perception that we have to be stuck in the Midwest. Mm-hmm. And you know, there are a couple things happen in the next 5 years. Like my son will be graduating high school. You know, maybe not like maybe we have a big enough company that we can split it and the different like there's yeah like there how we make Bald Move work that. From his sure. villa in Rome, you know, or wherever.
Are you kidding me? I'll be in Abruzzo if anywhere, like Rome.
But you know, it's like, how do we make the time zone? It's not just the tech. It's like the time zone. How do we make it to where like Jim can kind of satisfy his wanderlust and desire to not be in the armpit of the United States? His words, not mine. I actually do. I've kind of fallen in love with Cincinnati in particular. But I also like, I don't know that I want to live and die my whole life here. So I get that. So navigating that, like that's the big 5-year challenge. Like, how long is Jim going to be stuck in the Midwest? What is our plan to get out of there? Like, what does our studio look like? How many employees do we need? What's the revenue going to come from? Is television still going to be stable? Like, one thing that makes this work is the fact that we have giant shows that we cover. Like that, we really depend mm-hmm. on like having big tentpole shows that kind of bring new audiences in. And if television continues to diversify and splinter, that's going to be harder and harder to do. So and up till this point we've been living kind of hand to mouth, so it's been like, you know, we've had 1 year plans, we've had 3 and 6 month plans, but we haven't had like a 5 year plan. Mm-hmm. And that's like developing that, I think, is you know, and there's like we have plans for an app. A Bald Move app is like kind of a critical piece of this infrastructure. Some other things we kind of got up our sleeve. I guess stay tuned. We do another, you know, stealth ad for the club is we do this feature called the Empire Business, where once or twice a year we sit and do a series of kind of like behind the scenes. Here's what our money looks like. Here's what the challenges we're facing in advertising and challenges we're facing with club content. And if you're interested in that stuff, it might be worth the price of admission just to get access to. There's probably got something like 20 episodes of that right now, and mm-hmm. we're about to do a whole series in the next month or two.
Yeah. All right. Whitney asks, how long do you see yourselves doing this? Follow-up question. And what would you want to do after? Also, what's your favorite whiskey? I want to do this as long as I possibly can. It's by far the best job I've ever had. It's still a job, but it's the best job. And I can't see myself honestly doing much of anything else at this point. I mean, I think what I would do is end up transitioning from, you know, the coder that I was before we started this whole thing into some kind of, I guess, podcast professional in some capacity, because that's where I have most knowledge now. But honestly, yeah, I would like to keep doing this.
Yeah, I mean, I like having opinions about things and sharing with people and arguing about them. So like this kind of really fits me like a hand in glove. If there was ever an after Bald move, I imagine I would still do something like some kind of podcast, some kind of video podcast, some kind of travelogue thing, or I'd love to write for a site. Like I do love television and movies, and it would be cool to do, you know, like what Joanna does with Variety or Kim Renfro is doing for The Insider, like find an outfit that would have me and pay me a living wage to like talk about this stuff professionally. Cause like Jim, like I, you
it just
know,
seems
I,
like a downgrade from what we're doing now.
No, I get it. But like, you know, you said you don't know what the future
is. Oh
was,
yeah. Yeah.
Like
if
I'm saying
goes
like,
under,
if,
sure.
Yeah. If Bald Movers go under, or like, God forbid something happened to you or, cause I, yeah, like I, every time I think it's like, the other thing is like, I don't think I'd go back to IT because if nothing else, I've pared my living expenses down to where I could work a variety of jobs and cover my bills. So I would be looking for like a not-for-profit. Like I'd love to be a community outreach person for like a not a cause I believe in. I think that would be a cool, but like going back and like supervising Code Monkeys.
Yeah.
Writing another CRUD screen.
I'd just be a Code Monkey and that's no fun.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, yeah.
Jason, if you could pick one show to completely forget and watch again for the first time, what would it be and why? One show?
I mean, I guess I'm picking Breaking Bad. It's one of, if not my favorite show ever.
And it was a fun watch. That's
the thing. Like, discovering those characters again and that plot.
Yeah.
Like, the machinations of that plot are entertaining as hell. And I would love to watch that for the first time again.
I won't say The Wire, because I will say that The Wire rewards repeat watching like almost nothing else. Like, it's so many details that you just are background details on the first watch. When you go through second and third watch, everything just gets more and more tightly knit and woven together.
What about Westworld? If I could just watch it and not do a podcast about it,
yeah.
I wonder if that'd be any better.
I was thinking, like, what if I just watched Leftovers, no podcast? Like, knock myself in the head, I've forgotten Leftovers. Oh, I'm going to discover this, and Jim's not going to watch it, and so I'm just going to do it and do it as a fan. Like, that, like, having just a fan experience. Like, it also, like, in Men in Black flashed me so where, like, I don't even know that I'm a podcaster because, like, what I've become aware of in the last few years is, like, I can't watch things as a regular person anymore. Like, even when I'm watching a movie that I know I'm never going to talk about, there's the voice in the head of, like, oh, it might be interesting to be blah, or did you notice this, or look what they did with the lighting, and I'm like, fuck! So yeah,
I wonder how much of that is being a podcaster and how much of that is just having seen a million movies at this point.
Yeah. Like
if you didn't talk about it professionally, but you just had seen a bunch of movies, like as you get older, you see these things over and over and you're like, oh yeah, look what they did.
Yeah. I mean, one of the reasons I started doing this is because I fucking loved going to see a movie every weekend and seeing what Roger Ebert had to say about it and why he liked and like, you know, and watching commentaries and seeing special features. So you kind of like, there's some of that. You're right. It's not even about like the fact that it's a professional this or professional that. It's just like, imagine you go to film school. It's the same thing. It's going to ruin you for a certain level of like movie magic, you know? Uh-huh. And that's why, like, I think the things are really weird and strange and out there. Like Leftovers is what's really amazing to me. Cause like, I've never seen anything like The Leftovers and like, I can get lost in that because just the novelty of it and like, oh my fucking God, they're pulling this off. Wow. Overrides the just like, oh, what do I think about this as a take? Like, you know, what do I like? And then that's the other thing. It's like, sometimes I watch a bunch of movies are fine and they're fun, but like, I'm forced to have a take on them. Like, okay,
yep.
I thought it was a 70 out of 100 and here's why. This guy's hair was too greasy and this person's knee was too dry and they couldn't do the knee slide the way Tom Cruise, like, It's tough because it's like it forces you to polarize on something.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. I find that the most annoying part of watching things now is having to formulate an opinion. Cause like some things I come to it and I'm like, yes, I have a very strong opinion. I love this thing or I fucking hate this thing. The worst things to watch in my opinion now are the things where I come away from it going, that's pretty good.
Yeah. Like a 5 out of 10 or 6 out of 10.
Or that wasn't great, but you know, because there's no way to talk about that and get people excited. There's no way to talk for an extended time about that when that's our job,
right?
Essentially, like
it's like reviewing.
Develop at least
a
half an hour of content on this.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just a bowl of vanilla ice cream. You know what it tastes like. You're going to eat it for 2 hours.
It's fine. You know if it's for you.
It's fine. There's no sprinkles. There's no fudge. It's fine. It's fine.
All right, Justin, now that Game of Thrones is done, I wondered if you had any good suggestions for current shows that are great for theory crafting. I do. Although, I don't know what you mean by done. Do you mean, like, done? Can it be off-season? Because I think Westworld is actually a really good show for theory crafting, even though I don't know that they always pay it off. But, man, you have a lot of people going on about theories in that show.
Westworld... Mr. Robot.
True Detective was actually like that.
True Detective, although this last season didn't really reward... None of the seasons, honestly, have rewarded it, but it's been fun to do.
Yeah, and it has happened.
I said Mr. Robot and Fargo. You said Westworld. Is The Expanse? Because I feel like it's following
theory?
A book
no.
series that people... It's kind of like Game of Thrones, where although I similar to Game of Thrones, this series is not done either. So I guess the high-level theory crafting I'm not involved in because I'm trying to not pay attention to what's going on in the books.
And it doesn't have, like, you know, prophecies and stuff like that that you can look at and say, what does this mean for the future of the show?
Yeah.
It's more like... The theory crafting is, are they going to follow this arc or are they going to stray from it?
Right. You know? And how with the characters and the situations they've got already and the adaptions they've made, how are they, you know? So.
Because they seem to be following the general plot
of
those books pretty closely.
Audrey, I've been a loyal listener and club member since 2016. Thanks, Audrey. Gosh, that's
a long time.
3+ years now. While the chemistry between Jim and Aaron has kept me coming back low these many years, I've also really enjoyed the extra Cecily, especially when all three of you together. What changes has allowed Cecily to do more casts with you? Are Aaron and Cecily still going to do their advice podcast? Any chance Jim's girlfriend would ever join in on a first-run movie? I've enjoyed having these women's perspectives peppered in. What changed? I mean, honestly, the thing that changed is we had the money, and we were going... We knew to get better, we were going to have to get bigger because we were at max capacity and had been at max capacity for a long time, and it was starting to hurt, like, other things in the business. Like, we weren't taking care of some of the business things, and we weren't, like, thinking of new things, and we weren't doing things, that, like, experimental things because we didn't have time for it. You know, we had some good ad campaigns come through. We had the club sale that went off like bananas, and we decided we wanted to take, you know, it was a calculated risk because I don't think we've grown to where we quite have the revenue to sustain her salary long term, but we had for sure a year or so of runway and with some plans to put those in place, you know. Like, if honestly, if Game of Thrones are coming back next year, it'd be no problem. But we don't have another Game of Thrones, and we need to replace that revenue with other more reliable things, which we're working on. So that's the thing that changed to you know, because before it's like it's a limiting thing. It's like with a full time job, doing as many podcasts as Cecily did just for fun. I mean, I know how grueling that could be.
Did it for 6 years,
right? And to no benefit to her. Like, it was just like it was just like she was doing it because she liked doing it and because she likes Bald Move and she likes talking on a podcast. So we do want to do an advice podcast. It's just finding room in the schedule. Probably trying to have to, like, stop doing some things to do something else, you know, kind of thing, or like getting Cecily going full time would help out on that too. We already talked about your girlfriend and Bald Move, I think.
Yep.
I think that might be a good, like, dip toe in the water. Like,
there have been a couple, like Detective Pikachu. I think she might have liked to sit in. But the problem with that is these movies go fucking late.
Yeah. She's got a really early morning.
She does, although Fridays she doesn't work her full-time job.
Yeah.
So she can stay up later, but she's tired from getting up at, like,
that's what
fucking
I'm saying.
6 a.m. in the morning.
It's tough to swing that around, you know.
So staying up till midnight is not easy.
Maybe, like, one of these nostalgia, if we do Super Serious Film Fest and there's a movie she feels real strong about, she could get in. Because that's, like, you know, we can schedule it whenever. She can have as big as a small part. Like, something that, because it's a big, just to jump into this thing is a lot.
Yeah, I think it's intimidating.
And honestly, something you guys probably don't know is when Cecily and I first got it started, I had to spend like when Jim and I first started, we probably spent three or four times longer editing a podcast than we did podcasting because mm-hmm. we weren't disciplined about going off on tangents or, you know, we kind of didn't understand each other's natural rhythms on things. So we'd step on toes or we'd crosstalk or we'd lose our train of thought and or we'd go in circles, repeat ourselves. Not that we never do that, but like we have gotten to where you can get a podcast out the door like 10, 15 minutes after we hit stop recording.
Yeah, as we're recording podcasts now, I'm actively marking things on the audio track that so I know, okay, right I'm going to edit that out.
Yeah.
Jump to there, pull out the clip, I'm done.
Yeah. And, you know, with Cecily, it's like I was going back to that days. Like, you know, if we did an hour-long podcast, you know, just to make sure I clean up all that stuff, I'd have to give it a one-to-one listen. And, you know, the other thing is, like, you know, Cecily and I, to keep it fun for her, we get fucking lit on a lot of these podcasts, which just exacerbates all those, whatever. Yeah. Makes them worse. Makes those problems worse. So, I think we've gotten a lot better, but like that, like those American Horror Story podcasts were way more time intensive than the average Bald Move podcast because, you know, of those reasons. So, bringing Jim's girlfriend in the mix, like he's cognizant that that process will have to, like she's gone from zero podcasting and public speaking to this. You have to account for that because to expect her to be just like merged smoothly on the on ramp of podcasting is just not going to happen.
Yeah, it's really honestly a thing that, you know, I would like to ease her into for the benefit of everyone, us, her, because I know that like it's a very intimidating thing to do when you first start, and I don't want her to feel like this intense pressure to be good, to be perform on a podcast.
Tell her never to read reviews or any kind of
well, that's the thing, like I want to do some sort of off the radar stuff with her first. Like we had this idea for the Brendan Fraser retrospective that we kind of wanted to
do it as Al.
Yeah,
just go completely off grid.
Yeah,
go in the mountains, get Ted,
there you go,
get Unabomber,
but
on
we
it.
Just spoiled that, everybody knows about Al now. But yeah, hopefully sometime. Carla, do you find it difficult to maintain a healthy boundary between work and private life, given you are so open? I don't get recognized in the streets, so no. Which I think is what you're implying here, given you're so open.
I think it's also kind of like if you do live your life on, and it is tough, and like that's something me and Cecily we've been talking about this weekend, like, you know, with her working for Bald Move now, how boy the lines between work and private life are really fucking blurred now.
As far as just like when you work and what is work,
like
and what
had,
isn't.
Like I and thank God I listened to this, but like Kumail Nanjiani and his wife who professionally collaborate together, they wrote a whole produced a whole movie, and I know I sound like I'm a bad feminist because I don't know her name, it's Emily something, but I called her Camille's wife because that's all she's famous for. They had this thing where I think it was on Harmontown, where they're talking about their professional relationship and how they had to institute rules, like you want with your partner, it's like, you know, when we're together, like even off the clock, we still sometimes like we'll have an idea or something funny, and it's like, oh, it's just back in a Bald Move conversation. But that can get annoying when like I've had a bad day and I just want to enjoy my food and someone's wanting to talk my ear off about their idea for Game of Thrones or vice versa. So like Kumail and Emily came up with a system where there could like have a say, hey look, I want to hear this, but let's not talk about work for like the next 2 hours or 4 hours, or I'll come and circle back to you, and like some way to just like say like, okay, I'm mentally checked out. I don't want to deal with this. I don't have the energy and the mood for it, because you can't be on 100% of the time, and like working that stuff out is good. And like I said, we're still actively in it. Like, you know, I'm shit. Like 4 years from now, when Jack has a Twitch channel and a YouTube channel, and like, how fucking weird is that going to be? Because that'll probably happen.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's going to want to try it. It might not succeed, but it's going to like, so like, I've got a lot of interesting milestones to navigate as far as that goes. Arzer. Do you think Game of Thrones will be the last golden age of television show that rules the monoculture? Is this fragmentation of audiences based on interest inevitable, or will something else grab most people's attentions?
I don't think it's the last, but I think there is a trend toward, like, if Netflix has their way, there's a trend toward the water cooler show of the week has come and gone within a week. They want you watching new stuff every single week. They want you never leaving Netflix, not, you know, not spending an hour a week there, spending 30 hours a week there.
Yeah. And HBO wants to do the same thing.
Yeah.
And Disney Network wants to do the same thing.
And so they're pumping out more and more content to try and do that. And if you just dump it all at the same time, 10 episodes in one day, you're not going to get those big phenomenon shows. You're going to get splashes of it here and there. It's going to be like, you know, when Stranger Things hits, everybody's talking about Stranger Things for a week, and then nobody's talking about Stranger Things. You don't get that same type of investment.
Yeah, I think I'm a little bit more bullish. I think that the monoculture always has a way. Something is going to capture our attention, and people are going to talk about it, and other people are going to have that FOMO, that fear of missing out, and want to, like, catch up on it. Now it's so easy. It used to be like, if you didn't catch on to a show in the first season or two, then fuck it, what are you going to do, rent all the tapes from Blockbuster? Like, it's so much the barrier to entry on a big show is so much lower, like, because you can just go to HBO Go or Netflix or Amazon and start watching it just, you know, in your free time. But you're right, like, if Netflix gets its way, I just don't think what Netflix is doing is sustainable. Like, I don't think 3 years from now we're talking about Netflix dropping 40 hours of television 3 times a week, every week. I just don't think they can keep it up.
I kind of hope you're right. I know that they're going deeper and deeper into debt. Like, they're taking out more and more loans in order to pump this content out. And
they keep increasing their prices, and they keep on...
Yeah, but there's a limit to all that.
Yeah, there is. And also, it's bad. It's long-term bad for their shows, because Stranger Things would be probably 4 times bigger if people talked about it for 10 weeks out of the year instead of 2 weeks out of the year.
Absolutely.
And this thing's going to come out now on July 4th weekend.
Yeah, half the people aren't even going to watch it.
And the people are going to blend into everything else they're doing. It's like,
They'll get to it, like, the next... middle of the next week, they'll binge a couple episodes after their work day when they're begrudging their vacation is over. Like.
Right.
Yeah, it's a terrible idea.
They see it as their competitive advantage, the same way, like, fucking Olive Garden sees unlimited breadsticks as the competitive advantage. But, like, there's only so much breadsticks I can possibly eat at a sitting, and then it's just like I'm fucking a foie gras. I'm like a goose getting my liver fattened up. Like, just because you got free breadsticks, man, don't mean I want to eat 40 every time I show up at the Olive Garden. Eventually, I'll stop going. So, like, I don't know. I don't know. It'll be interesting. It'll be interesting to see how this, because I never, we had this talk when Breaking Bad was going off the air, and no one knew that Game of Thrones, the dragon show, was going to blow up the 150 million people watching it simultaneously worldwide. So, like, every single time people say, well, you'll never get a Lost where there's 50 million people watching it in unison, there'll be Game of Thrones saying, hold my beer. Is The Watchmen going to do that? Is The Expanse going to do that?
That's why I say it's probably not The Lost, because we still have that old style of TV model, which is weekly release of a single episode, and the idea that you can build a community around a season of television.
I think in my, I tell you what, I think in our lifetime, we'll see an international show be that. Like, it's like something like The Kingdom is going to come out of South Korea, and everybody's going to be watching that the way.
But I just don't know. Like, that's what I mean. If Netflix has its way.
Yeah.
Like, if this binge model is the thing that just kind of takes over television, I think it's far less likely that we'll have another show that performs like Game of Thrones. Because you can't build a community around 1 week a year.
Yeah, you can't.
I guess tell that to fucking Burning Man or something. Like,
well, it's kind of like sports, right? Like, there's a lot of people that would probably be into baseball or basketball or football if they could watch, you know, one game. Like, football is, like, probably one of the reasons it's more and more popular is because there's only 16 games you got to watch if you want to stay in your team. But, like, if you're a big fan of baseball or basketball, the amount of television you got to watch, and it's like a lot of people just opt out. Like, fuck it. Even though I might enjoy watching a game or here or there, and television can get that way too. Like, if you have to start, like, shit, watching this shit and listening to the podcast and reading the Reddits and all that stuff, it can be exhausting, especially for people not doing it as a job. So it'll be interesting to see how it goes.
Yeah. Is it my turn?
Yes.
What Miles wants to know, what's our all-time holy shit moment from a TV show?
I got a few.
I tried to interpret what he meant by holy shit moment.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's like a moment that is just so good you can't believe it, or a twist that's so twisty you can't believe it.
I think any of these are acceptable holy shit moments.
Okay, I have one as well.
Okay, I have a bunch.
Well, he asked, what's your all-time holy shit?
I can't.
Holy shit moment.
I have an easier time coming up with a top five than a top one.
I'll give it to you. I had 7 albums. You can have multiple holy shit moments.
Box Cutter from Breaking Bad.
Okay.
Let's
see if you name my Breaking Bad one, because mine is from Breaking Bad.
That's the only Breaking Bad one I got.
Okay.
The season finale of season 3, I think, of Boardwalk Empire, where Richard Harrow shows up at a bordello to collect the kid and just roll up the whole shop. The climax of Justified season 2, the Mags Bennett story.
That's a really good one.
It was in the glass all along.
That's such a good twist.
International Assassin, like that entire fucking hour of television on The Leftovers. Those are my, like, when I think about TV, that kind of like flipped my mind and like blew it of what this medium was capable of. Those are the ones that kind of stick out to me. What you have? I'm curious.
All very good. My number one that stood out was from Breaking Bad in Crawl Space.
Mm.
I think it's season 4, episode 11.
Yeah. What was the moment? Right. Was it the?
It's Walt going down into the crawl space, realizing the money is gone.
Yeah.
And just losing his shit, losing it. He's losing his mind in that moment. And Bryan Cranston does such a perfect performance.
He left it all out. Like he just nothing left, nothing in the tank.
Amazing.
Joey, if you could have one celebrity guest on your podcast, I had to narrow it down to the top 5. Who would you choose? Gabe was on. He saw this on Twitter and said it's got to be Paul Giamatti.
I mean, that's a very good one. Yes, but. Yeah, I almost can't at this point.
Yeah, I'd be like, there's no way.
Well, like, what do we have him on and say, Mr. Giamatti, there's something I'd like you to watch.
Yeah, well, this was all done out of love and respect for the work that you've done, right. Mr. Giamatti. And, you know, I see myself as something as a hedgehog myself.
I'd like you to listen to 3 episodes of Quip. And the pitches that we did there. Giamatti, man.
I've always been attracted to the showrunners. Like having a guy like Vince Gilligan, David Simon, Damon Lindelof on and just talk about their process and how they come up with their ideas and how they break it down. And I just know like they, you know, and Vince, you can hear him talk a lot on his podcast, you know, that he does with on the official capacity, like Breaking Bad, Better Call Saul. But those guys like that, I think those just really interesting POVs to have on and talk to.
Man, this is one that was too big to premeditate. It was too intimidating.
Mm.
Like I don't know. There are so many celebrities. There are so many interesting people to talk to. I feel like the person I would most want to talk to would be someone who has relevant experience for what we're trying to do with Bald Move.
Hmm.
Like that would be the most interesting person is like a Robert Koo or somebody, right? Like how do you take these two nobodies and turn them into, at this point, international sensations, right? I mean, Pax is gone international.
Just to be clear, you're talking about Mike and Jerry, not...
Not Bald Move, yeah. No, I would ask Robert Koo how he did that because that's an astounding feat to me. I feel like I could get some actual... Because I don't give a lot of shits about celebrities.
Uh-huh.
Celebrities are just fucking people who have a job that is in the public light.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care to talk to Hugh Jackman ever. Maybe he's an interesting guy. Maybe I would, you know, talk to him for an hour and go, wow, that was a really cool conversation.
Sure.
But, like, I wouldn't seek that out because I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
But, like, people who, I don't know, I feel like I could have a genuine conversation about things that matter to both of our lives.
Yeah, generating value is, like, a magical thing. Like, banging two rocks together and there's a profit. Like, you know, how did,
how did
this guy, like, you know, like Robert Koo is a great example, the guy who took Penny Arcade and made it profitable. Mike and Jerry, from a fan's outside perspective, did nothing differently. It's just now suddenly they grew by geometrically because mm-hmm. they had some dude rubbing coins together and, you know, making these business deals and building these relationships and finding value and planning and plotting and meticulously sweating the details. And I don't have those bones in my body.
No, but I have the language to discuss it, and I feel yes. like that's important. Like I want to have a conversation that benefits both of us,
right?
Not just like me asking. So, what was it like to work with Famke Janssen?
Right.
Like, who gives a fuck?
Probably pretty cool.
It was probably pretty cool. But you know what wouldn't be cool? The conversation about how cool it was. Like, no one cares. Is it me?
Yes, it is.
Barbarist Smidgen asks, if you were strong actors and liked the work, which Game of Thrones character would you wish to have played in the series? Full gender fluid freedom, should your answer require it? I was a strong actor and liked the work.
I'd like to do the Hound. The Hound, like, every fucking second of his screen time is solid gold, and he gets to do so much different things, and he's got the memorable quips, and he's always the one to put you that has the cutting quick cut down, and when he can't do that, he can literally cut you down. It's like that eating every last chicken scene must have been so much fun to film. I think that would be super cool. The Hound, for hands down.
It's a really good one. I'd probably have to go with Bronn. For a lot of similar reasons.
So that's why you're smarter than me, because you got the role that's essentially the same thing, except for you also get to hang out with naked people and don't have to sit through 6 hours of makeup.
Yeah. Maybe Pod, so I could have a reputation. You know, but then I'd get accosted on the street. People grab my... I don't want any of that.
Yeah, that's the unfortunate thing.
No. Bronn is the correct answer for me.
Good answer. Luke, are there any Australian TV dramas you're interested in? I'm going to go full ugly American here. I'm not aware of Australian dramas.
It's sad, too, because every time we've been recommended an Australian film, I've loved it.
Animal Kingdom, fucking
amazing. Proposition, fantastic. Like,
really good. Wasn't The Mule Australian, too?
The Mule, is it an Australian film, or is it just... You know, it might be an Australian film. Yeah. I really like that one, too.
So, you got any recommendations? I'm not above watching it. Like, I know you guys are doing really great work. I mean, everyone, like, that's the thing about doing these TV preps on Netflix is, like, there's so much good shit coming out of Korea and India and Japan and China nowadays. Like, the whole Asian continent and subcontinents are all rising up and making tons of really good shit. Mm-hmm. You know, us Anglos are going to have a hard time keeping up.
All right. Tony asks, does Jim not know how to read, or does he just flat out refuse to read? # books are always better. That's not true. Books are not always better. Also, robots have more efficient ways of acquiring information. Books are
like when data just does the flip, and he absorbs the entire thing.
I mean, I prefer to acquire my information through my eyes and ears, as opposed to my eyes alone. what can I say? Maybe I don't know. I don't like reading books because it takes a long damn time for me to read a book. And at that point, I could have just watched a show. I can listen to an audiobook while I'm doing other things. Reading is a thing that you focus on solely for... I don't know how long it takes me to read a book. A long time, though. Days and days.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of a preference thing. I feel like my son's going to turn into a non-reader, too. He likes reading, like informational things, like National Geographic and things about space. I've tried to start him off on a bunch of things I thought he would like. And I started off, like, I read to him every night. Up until he was like 10 years old. And I thought he would start, because me and my sister are both voracious readers, and my parents were, and Cecily's a reader. We read all the time. But it seems like maybe he needs to find the series that grabs him and takes hold. Because, like, that's the thing. Like, when I listen to Jim talk and I just can't relate. Like everything he says, it's, I get it. Like if you love reading books, then like everything he said just sounds like unmitigated bullshit, but it's people's preference, you know?
Yeah.
Heather wants,
it's not like I don't read books. I listen to books.
Yeah.
It's the same thing.
Yeah. See, I prefer real books to audiobooks because I've found that like I can speed up and slow down the narrative based on how I'm enjoying a particular scene. Like a scene that's like building up to something, I can slow down and savor, versus when there's just a lot of shit that I'm not caring about, I can kind of skim and blast through. Whereas like the plotting, consistent pace of an audiobook, I find myself getting distracted and this thing's been droning for 90 seconds. Shit, skip, 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 skip. Okay, I'll pay attention this time. Oh, fuck, it's another five paragraphs about how this brick looks in the sunset. Oh, fuck. So
I guess I never do that with books. I don't ever skip a single word in a book.
That's the only way I got through, like, The Fellowship.
That's what I mean.
That fucking
like,
Council Elrond can go suck a dick because it's 70 pages and half of it's elvish songs. The hell with that, man. Like,
yeah,
I see italicized
maybe if I had
text
read those,
in J.R.R. Tolkien, and I'm skipping. And
fair.
I didn't miss a thing. Mark. Or no, that's actually Tether. Congrats, guys. My question is, what are you going to do with all this fame? I'm going to take it to the fame bank. I'm going to cash that shit in.
Oh, yeah? I'm going to squander it.
Are you? Squander yeah. it? Nice.
That's my plan.
Nice. You'll probably enjoy it more.
Yeah. All right, Mark. How does Spotify buying up podcasting companies such as Gimlet affect the future of podcasting? Also, iHeartMedia acquired the Stuff Media Podcast Network, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Spotify is obviously a closed-down platform, which doesn't allow for premium feeds, but does it allow for a much larger shop window to get people through the door?
It seems like the way of the world is companies buy up other companies and...
Consolidation.
It seems like it's really awesome up until the point where it's not. I think we are passing that point with like media conglomerates now, with the latest moves Disney has pulled. Like I feel like we are, and like with things like banks, I think we're way over the line and we need to start splitting some of that stuff up. And podcasting, I think, is the same way. Like iTunes started this massive lead that they have for reasons that are bewildering to me, just sat and let Android and all these other platforms in. Like they could have from day one baked in monetization of podcasts, and they could have made money, but they've like ran this as just weird loss leader, and they've had as like one of the first truly new cultural forms of media dissemination that we've had in my lifetime, and has given it zero value.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't get it. I don't understand.
Yeah. I mean, you basically read my premeditated comments here. TV, you see what's happening in TV. The exact same thing is going to happen in podcasting. It's just a few years behind because the money isn't as big, but it's coming. It will happen. These big companies will snap up all of the attention. I mean, it's already happening. Look at the top charts of iTunes 5 years ago. Actually, look at the top charts of iTunes compared, like, right before Serial hit, and now look at them.
Mm-hmm.
And you almost cannot find an independently produced podcast in the top 100 iTunes charts.
Yeah.
It's just like we occasionally get there when we do a big fucking show like Game of Thrones, mm-hmm. right? But that's only because we've been doing it for a decade. Good luck trying to get in there now. And that's just going to get worse and worse. People are going to buy up all of these networks, all of these small guys. And yes, you will be paying. Like, look at the bundling that's happening with subscriptions. I mean, Disney has two fucking subscription services, Hulu and now the Disney Plus. Guaranteed, they're going to bundle those all together. It'll become one big subscription. You're going to have to go to major corporations pretty soon to get any podcast content.
It wouldn't
that's
shock
professionally
me
produced.
For like HBO and Netflix to do a deal. Where
yeah.
they just
yeah.
like be because like that's
I mean
the
HBO
only,
is willing to sell.
It's the only well, and there's not even kind of out of their hands because whatever
no, it's AT&T or
yeah and time, whatever Time Warner owns
yeah.
now. Like, I mean, that's the only way you're going to square off against the mouse.
Yeah,
is for the little guys, the suddenly little guys to band together. Like, it's going to all be interesting. All be interesting what we're going to live through.
It won't be good. It won't be yeah, good. It'll just yeah. get worse from here, and you're going to end up paying a lot more. For you'll end up paying a lot more for a lot more stuff, but stuff you probably don't care about.
It's funny because it's like all this was memes 10 years ago when we first started talking about cord cutting, like the whole idea that your internet would turn into your cable TV package with like different things, you know, buying Netflix fast lanes, and the fact that now like you don't have cable, but you know, do you want to watch Star Trek? Well, you better have CBS All Access online. Do you want to watch, you know, Harlots? Well, you better have Hulu. Do you want to watch the, you know, Good Omens or The Expanse? You got to have Amazon. And it's like being a cord cutter, if you want to keep up with everything, is expensive. And so people don't. So it's like, well, who are the big ones that are going to survive? I don't know. Like I said, it's going to be ugly, but it'll be interesting. And we'll see how everything shakes out at the end. Ben, what's been the biggest disappointment for you? The decline of The Walking Dead leading to your quitting the show during arguably the most interesting comic storyline, or the finale or the final series of season of Game of Thrones?
Game of Thrones. Yeah, easily Game of Thrones. I've spent so much time on Game of Thrones, invested so much of my life in many ways into Game of Thrones, and here we are.
Yeah, and I, you know, there's some people that like it, and I'm jealous for you. But boy, that really took a lot of wind out of my sails. Fortunately, Chernobyl and Deadwood and Fleabag, a couple others, kind of put the wind right back. But it was a lot of time and effort spent in the last 2 years building up to Game of Thrones, and it, for me at least, didn't add up. I believe it's your turn.
Is it me? Oh, DC CUDA has wants us to pick from a series of characters. They're gonna do this person or that person. We have to choose James Holden or Jon Snow. And for people who don't know, these are all going to be the Expanse characters versus Game of Thrones characters.
I feel like this is like that Pam from The Office meme where I literally can't tell the difference.
Yeah, I'm going with Holden.
Yeah, Holden's the future.
He is the future. I feel like he had a rocky past, but he's on the path to recovery. Jon Snow kind of was just a dope all along. Like, he was doing big things, but just not very engaging.
It's kind of like the Peyton Manning-Tom Brady conversation. It's like, it was interesting, and then one of them retired, and now the other one's going to run away with it. So.
Gotcha. All right, Amos or Bronn?
It was a conversation, but I felt like Amos had a real strong season 3 of The Expanse, like the apex Amos badass moment of all time. The infamous "I am that guy" scene.
We just watched that the other day.
Goddamn, that's good. Whereas Bronn had a, hey, I'm being shoehorned into this season because people love me.
Yeah.
Like, you know, we loved Bronn because of all the awesome things he did in the early seasons of Game of Thrones, and he's kind of been coasting on that, where Amos is still building steam. So I got to go. Also, just straight up sexiness contest, Amos blowing Bronn's doors off.
Yeah, of course.
Jesus Christ, Amos is a good looking man.
Yeah, but the I don't feel like it's fair to compare a man who must be nearing 50 now to a man who's probably in his early 30s, if that.
Yeah, but that man also took down Lena Headey in their primes, so like he's a pop star in Britain.
He
like,
can sing, I bet Amos can't sing.
There you go, but he can walk in high heels.
He definitely knows how to do that. Christian or Cersei? Christian or Cersei?
I like Christian a lot.
Fuck, no.
But
no.
It's hard to beat Cersei.
It's impossible to beat Cersei when your opponent is Christian.
I'm interested in seeing Christian unleashed in season 4, because now she can be her full vulgar self from the novels.
Maybe she'll be better. Draper or Arya? Bobby or Arya?
I gotta go with Bobby.
I
love Arya. My fucking cat's named after her. But, you know,
I've tried to rate this on a badass scale.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen, like, once you see Bobby Draper step up to a turbo lift door and just pry it open.
Mm-hmm.
Like, granted, she's in a suit, but her suit,
twice as long to do it barehanded. You know, it'd still get done.
Right, it'd still get done. how about Proto Molecule or Night King?
I mean,
Proto Molecule. Yeah. It has more of a personality.
Already, like, and a purpose and everything. Jesus Christ.
For sure. And finally, Julie or Lyanna Stark?
Okay, yeah. Book. If you add the books, then Julie, no question.
Yeah.
I mean, Game of Thrones got ran out the fucking gym here.
I know.
Because if you'd asked me like two seasons ago, it'd have been a hell of a lot harder on a lot of these questions. But like,
absolutely, where there was still possibility ahead of us.
It's time to get on the Expanse, y'all. It's the space Game of Thrones. It's going to be on Amazon.
Hell yeah.
Watch it however you have to. Lee, what has been the high point and low point for each of you over the past how many years? This can be anything at all Bald Move related, something on TV or film, or some even issue that you've had to resolve in building the Empire.
I think the high point is either, and I couldn't really choose here, it's that Mark Hamill tweet moment from Groundhog Day this year, or hitting number one on the iTunes podcast charts was like, I mean, I talked, you know, early on in this about how 50 million downloads seemed like no way, impossible. Number one on iTunes is that times 10. Like 50 million you could do if you put out 50 million podcasts and you downloaded them once.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Getting to number one on iTunes requires an effort by the people who are part of your community. And that to me is just shocking. My low point is always the weeks where we do like 8-9 podcasts for a sustained period. Because I can do, like the other week we did 9 podcasts and that was like, okay, well, this is the 7th week of a pretty heavy workload, and now it's just kind of everything crashing down on you, but that's only for a week. Mm-hmm. But there were times a few years ago back in my old apartment where we were doing 8 podcasts a week for like 12 weeks in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And that had a huge drag on me, just mentally.
Yeah. I mean, I've been pretty open about it, but last year was a pretty tough year for me. I had some personal tragedy. My granddad died. And it happened in the middle of like some pretty big deadlines for hitting my Gods of Thrones book. And I had been living for like, ever since we started Bald Move, on like a shoot, like, very like zero room margin for error kind of budget, situation. And that's like, you know, if you guys, I know there's probably a lot of people still in that. And it's really stressful when like, okay, I'm making it, but God damn it. Like I got a car that's got 250,000 miles on its odometer and thing. I mean, Jesus, I don't know I honestly don't know what I'd done if that thing's engine blew up like 3 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
Cause I like add a car payment onto that. Like, I mean, my 2004 Pontiac Vibe, unsung hero of the Bald News story. Like that thing, yeah. That thing's beating heart from a Toyota Corolla is just indomitable. Like it's crazy. And I just felt like I was failing at everything, and I was letting my family down. And then like Jack's late last year started struggling for the very first time in school. And like I just felt like I was like I just got just kept on getting kicked in the teeth, and it really took a toll on me. And this year's been a lot better. I gotta try not to put myself in that position where I'm that buried in work again, where I just feel like I can't get out for a whole year. And
yeah,
and but that, yeah, last year it's funny because like there's a lot of really big moments for Bald Move and everything just felt like muted. I wasn't able to like take full joy in it because I was just you know, kind of had a wet blanket on me. But that's my answer. High points like Jim, you know, like these last few charity drives we've done that have been really successful. The you know, getting top marks on iTunes, all that stuff has been really, really freaking exciting and cool. And something that just like, it's one of those things where it's like, when I talk to like, when I meet people for the first time, or I'm in like, and people are like, oh, what do you do? Like, I try to tell the least interesting version. Like, oh, I run a podcast network in Cincinnati. And oh, what do you talk about? Oh, movies and television. Oh, what are some of the things you heard? And like there's no version of this thing that doesn't end in me like awkwardly bragging about myself.
Yeah.
Or like what's worse is when I have a friend that knows me better and they're well-meaningly egging me on, like, oh, he's being too mod. I'm like, oh Christ, I want to retract in my own asshole. I don't know why it's so hard to deal with pride in something you've done, where it feels like it's like, I don't know if it's like this like false humility from my Jehovah's Witness days or what, but like, it's tough. I love my long-time friends. Like, I've got a handful of friends that have been with me since, like, before Bald Move, because they don't even give a shit. Like, none of them listen to the podcast.
That's really cool.
Some of them do, like, here and there, but, like, I don't have it. And it's, like, it's fun because, like, I can just talk to them about kids and jobs and, you know, in like, an abstract sense, like, stresses, not like, oh, you're a podcaster, you just, you know...
Yeah, well, I think it's cool because, like, I have, you know, friends who I've been friends with for, I don't know, a ton of years, way before we started this. And, like, I can still talk with them about these things, but I never feel like I'm bragging. I'm just kind of giving them an update on how it's going, you know? And they're curious about it. And, like, but it doesn't, like, dominate the conversation either, right? We still have this thing beyond just, like, oh, you're that successful of a podcaster.
Yeah.
To talk about. It's
also, like, I really value the guys from Seattle because, like, just coincidentally, they've all had, like, giant successes. Like, one's a really successful architect. Some guy started and founded a successful brewery. Another guy's been, like, got in Amazon at the beginning. And you got another guy who's, like, seems to be successful at literally anything he wants to do. Graphic design, video editing, sales and marketing.
Traveling the world for his job. Like,
for it's all about selling video games and stuff. Like, it's it's nice. It's nice to go out and just, like, hey, look at all the cool stuff that everybody's doing, and it's all fun to kind of catch up on that. So That helps having people that you can share that stuff with.
Brian asks, which is your favorite character from all the shows you've cast about and why? Yes, several others, but let's stick with that for now.
I'm going to go with Richard Harrow from Boardwalk Empire, although I will say that Amos from The Expanse has given him a hell of a run for his money. Because he's just, like, Richard Harrow is just such a fucking interesting guy. World War One vet, got half his face blown off. He's portrayed just, like, this really restrained performance by Jack Huston, because he's supposed to have, like, these severe physical, like, problems, and he can't speak right, and he wears this tin mask, and he's also just a fucking lethal badass. Like, with all, like, he's an assassin from his sniper war experience, and that comes in handy when you're running booze in Atlantic City, it turns out. And he just has, like, a great fucking arc. I love everything about him.
I think mine might be Miller from The Expanse. Thomas Jane brings just, like, he tickles me because he's, like, such an exasperated character. Mm-hmm. He doesn't give a shit about most things that people give a shit about.
He's such
a
great
very strongly does give a shit about certain things.
Yeah.
You know, it's sort of those idiosyncrasies of his character that make me just... Every time he's on the screen, I smile because I know there's something either ridiculous that's going to happen or something badass that's going to happen or a bad decision he's going to make for really good reasons and everybody's going to get pissed at him.
Yeah.
It's just a great character.
Yeah. Yeah.
How about most disappointing character?
I'm going to go with Dorne Martell.
Man, that's a strong one. Yeah.
I had not seen Alexander Siddig in anything cool since, like, literally Reign of Fire. And he's got, like, an all-time best badass, like, hidden viper type speech that he delivers in the novelizations of the Game of Thrones series. And when they cast him, and I'm like, oh, and it's, like, coming on. And I didn't know what Prince Doran was going to do because fucking George Martin stopped writing the novels. But I'm like, oh, man, this guy's going to be, like, as the brother for fucking Oberyn and, like, the going to give the fire and blood. Like, oh, it's going to be so fucking cool. And literally nothing. Literally nothing.
Man.
I think they just filed off the details of his wheelchair, gave it to Bran, and that's all we got from Prince Doran, who is such a interesting, unfulfilled character in his own right from A Song of Ice and Fire. What about you, Jim?
I'm struggling to come up with a better one than that. That's pretty fucking disappointing. And just the, like, even as just a show watcher only,
right,
the promise was there. Like, Alexander Siddig, I really love that actor. I knew that you had... kind of some of the stuff that was going to happen with the Dorn stuff in the books, and I'm like, oh, this could be really cool. I wonder where they're going to take it.
It was the opposite of that in the show.
It was just
uncool, deeply uncool.
They took it nowhere. They just said, nah, we don't want to deal with any of this. Yeah. Goodbye.
They went all in on the sand snakes and skipped poor Doran. Yeah. Poor Alexander.
So that's a good one. He also continues, any show you missed casting about and regretted it?
I do wish we had gotten in on the ground floor of season one of True Detective, because that really caught a lot of people's imagination, and I think it fit us like it, but it just, the schedule didn't quite work out, and we missed it. I don't know. It'd been cool if we'd gotten in ground floor of The Expanse.
Would we have kept doing it? Like,
yeah.
As many people, I don't know. I don't know. The Expanse is weird.
And then you got the X-Files and the Losts of the world as well.
Mm-hmm. And finally, did you stick with The Walking Dead too long or bail too early?
I mean, in hindsight, we clearly bailed too early.
I think we did maybe both.
Yeah.
Could we have stopped around like season four and then come back for season nine?
That we should have shut it down like immediately after Alexandria was, like, as soon as the cold rolled steel, we built that for all of its steel.
Just skip the whole Negan arc and then go directly to whatever they're doing now.
Or just stop there and, you know, done it. But like, yeah, like with that show was still wildly popular. Like our version where we were just every week, like, why are we doing this? Why are we all doing this? Why are we making this mutual commitment, this terrible show? But yeah, it turned out it would have been season nine would have been a lot of fun to cover. So fuck me, I guess. P, favorite on-screen Game of Thrones romance.
Ashes in my mouth. It's Jaime and Brienne.
Well, see, on screen is key because I think that it's hard to beat Ygritte and Jon Snow.
Okay, that's
chemistry
so one.
Good they fucking got married in real life.
Yeah,
I really liked everything they did, and that's some of the strongest. That's to me the best, because everyone else I feel. Well, that didn't end up having a happy ending either. But I'm like, a lot of the others are tinged by just how terrible things ended.
Mm-hmm. That's why I say it's ashes in my mouth with Jaime and Brienne, because I was so happy and so excited for her going into the second to last episode, and then it happens.
Yeah.
Amy, if you never started podcasting, what would you be doing right now? I'd be a web developer or... hopefully, maybe some other kind of business idea, because I was definitely in that mode when we kind of started Bald Move, but probably a web developer.
I'd probably be some sort of project manager or project lead in some consulting firm, writing some kind of medical software or legal assistant software something that I, you know, the stuff I've been doing for the 10, 15 years before I got into Bald Move. Because why would you stop that if it's I was definitely getting bored, but that's why I was starting to shift into management, because I'm like, I just can't care about this fucking, like, other than abstract. And I was also really good at, talking to clients, and, you know, I feel like this is like very straight out of Office Space. So what do you do? you take the requirements and you give them to, like, yeah, fucker, I'd send an engineer in there to get customer requirements and sit through there with the testing and all that stuff. I felt like management was the next challenge. But, you know, managing developers is not easy. So I'm glad to be doing this instead.
Yeah.
Robert, what would you say are the top three things you contributed to your success? And what would you suggest to someone just starting out? Something that you wish you had known?
I came up with exactly three here. I didn't go overboard. Timing, consistency, and persistence. We got lucky with the timing of our coverage, that we kind of got in on the ground floor of the TV podcasting game. We always set a goal to be consistent and treat this professionally. And that at times was very hard to do, but I feel like it was a huge factor. If we didn't have a podcast out every week, you're just giving people an opportunity to turn you off and never come back.
Yeah.
If you let people down, they'll understand they don't really care about this. They don't really care about me. So that consistency is so important. And then persistence to just continue doing it until it became a thing that we could do full time, until it became a thing that could actually support us. Like, those are the three biggest things in my mind.
Yeah, and I think that, like, because those are all right on. I also think that, like, our chemistry is, yeah, like, something we get for free. And, like, it's what sets us apart from a lot of other equally good podcasts is that they just don't. I mean, sometimes I can see the twinkle in Jim's eye and I'm like, okay, it's time for me to set him up for a spike or vice versa. And, you know, when you have two guys that met 6 months ago and were thrown into a coat closet to bang out a podcast for XYZ,
yeah,
they don't, like, you know, they're all trying to force the humor and they're trying to.
Or went on a Facebook group and were like, mm-hmm, looking for a co-host for this XYZ podcast, right, that I'm thinking, right, about.
Yeah, and the guy ghosts him three or four yeah, episodes into the run. It's like, you see all that, and you know, that's something that we've never had to worry about. And I think that's also something that's been a big competitive advantage, is that we, just by virtue of knowing each other for a long time and the history we have, can make something interesting and funny when it might not otherwise be. So,
and trust, I think, like,
yeah,
there are very few times in this whole operation that I have been sort of let down by you. I struggle to even come up with one.
Uh-huh.
Just the idea that, you know, you, like, when you set out to do something, that your, right, your co-host is going to have your back,
right,
is something that's so important, because we've had other hosts who that has not been the case for.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the fastest way to kill a podcast, is to have one person or two people who are very committed and have another person who is not.
Yep.
That just really sours the whole thing.
Any suggestion for someone just starting out that you wish you had known?
I'm struggling with this, and I've always struggled with this, but, like, I think the number one thing is probably do what you love, not what you think other people will love. Because ultimately, if you turn this into a career, which is kind of the goal, I think, of a lot of people asking these questions,
mm-hmm,
you don't want to be doing something you don't love.
Yeah.
And I've always, like, there's some delicate balance here where half the time I'm doing things I love, half the time I'm doing things that I love less,
mm-hmm,
or maybe even don't enjoy at all.
Mm-hmm.
And if all I were doing was just things that I didn't enjoy doing, because, well, okay, I'm in this too deep now and it's all about the financials and the employees who are depending on me and stuff like that, then I would be miserable. But there's some kind of balance there. You got to do some stuff you don't like, but try and do stuff you love.
Plus, like, yeah, like, just in the beginning, if you're really truly starting from nothing, then there's so many things.
You're building your future here. Like,
yeah, yeah.
You are building the company.
Yeah.
Build it the way you want it.
Right. And do the you got to coast on passion on some of this stuff. And, like, you know, and I think that's something we've always had. Like, we had when we started, I remember we brainstormed, like, what we want this podcast to be and what we don't want it to be. And, like, we were really in sync with, like, here's the important things. You can't do this. And we hate when podcasters do this. And we, mm-hmm, set out to do the podcast we wish other people had made. And you can't go wrong with that, because the reality is you're going to suck at so many things. And you're going to fail at so many others that you don't even know, like, what demons are down the line. That if you hate it and you're just doing it to achieve a particular goal, it's going to be hard to stick with,
mm-hmm,
you know, because that's the thing. Like, if we'd have stopped at 77 episodes of Blue Yonder, it's still been, like, I would have had zero regrets. I learned lot, and it was fun, and I'd probably even go back and listen to them from time to time just to have a good laugh, because there's still some of those things we did that I think are hold up and are fun.
Mm-hmm.
So, good advice.
Whose turn?
It's yours.
Kay asks, asks us to rank the following sophomore slumps from best to worst. Daredevil Season 2, Fargo Season 2, Mr. Robot Season 2, True Detective Season 2, Westworld Season 2. From best to worst.
I guess Daredevil
Fargo?
Season 2 is the worst. Oh, we're going to... Okay, so best.
The best to worst. So Fargo is probably the best.
Fargo's Season 2 is real good.
I would go... Here's my list.
Uh-huh.
Fargo, Daredevil, True Detective, Mr. Robot, Westworld.
Huh. Because I think Fargo is the best. Because it's not really even bad. There's, like, a a minor stumble that I way probably overreacted to, and also because they'd kind of done a similar thing in season one of Fargo, and I'm like, oh, well, fuck, if they're going to... Anyway, but then I think Mr. Robot and Westworld are kind of on the same level of... It's not bad, but there was a noticeable kind of a lot of throat clearing and feet shuffling in the plot. Like, oh boy, I really want to get on to the next chapter, but I'm stuck wrapping up this one. And then yeah. I think True Detective if it wasn't a True Detective thing, it would be a fine, forgettable thing, and it had some great performances in it. But Daredevil season two, I thought, was a real drop off in that Immortal Ninja stuff.
Yeah.
And season three of Daredevil is so good, and season one of Daredevil is so good that it stands out.
I just felt like Mr. Robot and Westworld failed conceptually. Like, they went so in on their concept that they were, in my eyes, just complete garbage.
And Daredevil had the Punisher arc, which was really good. Whereas I'm struggling to think of the definitive Mr. Robot, Westworld 2, season 2.
I mean, when I think of the definitive ones, it's like Angela. And that was not good. I didn't enjoy any of that.
Yeah.
So, like, it's
better.
Defined by its bad arcs to me.
And, like the best things about Westworld season 2 were kind of, like, standalone.
Yeah, two.
You know, Samurai World or Shogun World. And then you had the Kitsuya, whatever the... I've forgotten all these people's names. What was the
Akechita?
Akechita, yeah.
Akechita, I don't know how you say it.
That was a good episode of television in the middle of kind of like a mess of a season, so. Bald Move. Oh, Mark. I should give credit where credit's due. Mark with a four-parter. Bald Move has experimented in areas such as commissioned movie reviews, live instant feedback, etc. What features are you working on for 2019/2020? Wouldn't you like to know?
That's why he's asking.
I mean, we're still noodling on Super Serious Film Fest because we think we've got a thing here. We just don't know what that thing is. There's also something that I'm not prepared to talk about. There's another thing I'm not prepared to talk about. I think the big thing is what we want to do in 2019 is build a really cool studio that allows us to do the work that we want to do in a nice professional manner with a nice upgrade to our video. And we're going to try to be more successful in video, like without losing anything that we're doing on the podcast. Can we make a video version of this with a low time investment that we can throw out on? Because it seems like long form YouTube entertainment is starting to be popular.
Yeah.
And I see no reason why we can't build something up to be in the neighborhood of a Red Letter Media, given a year's worth of time to put it together and polish it up. It's going to change. It's going to require a change in our workflow, upgrades in technology. But that's the thing I'm probably most excited about. Like some of these, like the what we've called enhanced podcasts on the Super Serious Film Reviews, like the one we did in Fantasy. Like, I thought we, I think that's kind of like, I guess, the future of Bald Move, that kind of stuff. Not the future. It's a thing that we want to do more of. There's a whole bunch of other questions, right? Mark continues. Now the Bald Move is big time, for some definitions of big time, any interest in bringing on insiders or players from some of the shows you're covering?
Not particularly, no.
Yeah, I've heard from so many people, podcasters, that really makes a relationship weird.
Yeah, how could it not?
That you once
if I had a podcast to do on Gods of Thrones, how would I do that podcast?
Right.
Because, like, what if I didn't like a paragraph?
Yeah, right.
What if I had critiques? Like, unless something is so stellar that you have literally nothing to say negative about it, I think that bringing on creators of content can only harm you.
Yeah, because you just can't love everything all the time. And part of being a fan is sometimes not liking something. Sometimes it's having doubts and then seeing that doubts, assuaged or like intensify. Like, that's part of the fan experience, honestly. It's like rooting for a team. Like, the most fun I ever had rooting for the Colts is when they kind of sucked. Like, when we had that 10-year decade of dominance where, like, we would get to almost the Super Bowl and then the Patriots would kick our ass in. That wasn't fun because, like, you just took for granted all of the regular season. It's just like, well, let's just see how far we make it. It was a much more fun when you were a scrappy team just trying to make the playoffs. So, I guess what I'm saying is, what am I saying? Bringing these well, yeah, what the fuck was I saying? How did this have anything to do with bringing insiders and players from other shows you're covering? It's like football.
Yeah, it's like football. Come on. Yeah,
I don't know why. It's
you don't understand that metaphor?
I put this hat on and I get all sporty up and suddenly it's all sports metaphors.
No, it would either affect the relationship that you have with those people or it would affect your coverage of their content, and neither of those sound attractive
to me. Oh, that's
a
quintessential part. Like, part of being a sports fan is having your heart broke so that when you finally come through, it's that much sweeter. And part of being a television fan is to hate and love the characters in equal measure. And then hopefully once a year, they pull out something that makes you really miss them for a whole other year. And there's ups and downs. And, there's a reason I don't read the fucking iTunes reviews. Because, I can read 25 star and one star will fucking piss me off for a whole day. I don't want that relationship with the person that I like. I don't want Vince Gilligan. Like,
yeah.
God damn it. A-Ron says he don't know where this season of Better Call Saul's going. Fuck him. I'm not, to tell him the have my agent tell him to go fuck himself. I don't have time for that.
Yeah.
Three, when will Jim be referring to his girlfriend by first name?
In her first podcast.
Her legal name is, turns out, it's just
girlfriend.
Jim's girlfriend.
Yeah, my girlfriend.
It's a good thing she ended up with you.
I think I've said it many times. You're not a big enough fan if you haven't heard my girlfriend's actual name.
Yeah, there's been like three times.
Oh, yeah. They're out there. You just haven't heard them because apparently you don't like bald moves.
It's probably about as often as I mess up and refer to you by your name.
Yeah, yeah.
What about allowing for 2 to 3 live caller interactions, kind of like click and clack on NPR based on input found on forums?
Look, trust me, no one except the caller wants that. No one wants that. We don't want that. The audience doesn't want that. The only person who wants to call in live to a podcast is the caller.
I don't think that's necessarily true, but here's
the
thing.
The amount of editing required to edit down a live conversation with a fan who is not a podcaster is enormous. And if you don't do it, your audience is not there to hear a podcast caller.
Yeah.
Your audience is there to hear a podcast host. So,
I think that the big problem is, with our personnel, that I can plow through 500 to 1,000 emails in a big season per like 24-hour period, but 100 email voicemail messages is just way, like, we did it, and just like doing a dozen or so takes so much time because people people don't like sit and like write a tight 1 minute comment. They meander and they leave a long 5 minute voicemail that's like, oh, you know, and like editing that into its most essential, just going through it to try to figure out what you want to use and then edit. So like Bald Move had to be significantly bigger to even think about that. I do think it would be a popular feature.
I don't, like, people aren't, I don't know. So there
Colin
are a lot
shows
of
are
weird
popular for a reason.
Well, not with me. That's the thing. Like I'm weird in a lot of respects. Like I don't like live podcasts. I don't like, or at least podcasts that are in a podcast feed that were recorded live. I don't like those. I like going to live podcasts.
No, I like click and clack. I like fresh air. I like talk.
No,
to, I like,
I don't like call-in shows.
The Diane Rehm show. Yeah.
I'm not there to hear the caller. I'm there to hear the host.
I like sports talk shows. I get it. I get the wavelength you're hitting on there, Mark.
Nah, you can do the A-Ron live call-in hour.
I might.
And have a whole bunch of people call in.
Your turn.
All right, Amy says, if you had to live somewhere on Planetos, where would it be? She kind of thinks Bravos sounds appealing. What would be the absolutely no way spot? Molestown is a hard no, according to Amy.
I think that the sole population of Molestown is sex workers. So if that doesn't appeal to you, then yeah, Molestown is a hard no. Bravos is pretty cool, pretty cosmopolitan. You'd have shitbirds challenging the duels left and right. That'd get old.
Getting mugged in the street for a pigeon.
I feel like Dorne feels like they're pretty live and let live, fairly egalitarian as far as these things go in a medieval society. The weather's nice, the wine is good, the people are fierce and interesting. I like Dorne.
Dorne's good. I was thinking Highgarden.
Oh, yeah.
Seems like a nice place to live. Rolling hills and fields.
Yeah.
And abundant food and nice weather. And my definite no is beyond the wall. Like, I do not want to live in a place that
cannibals and giants.
Snow never melts. Yeah,
the snow. Yeah, that's a tough one.
No thanks.
Anywhere in Slaver's Bay. I don't want to grow up in a place where it's a flip of a coin whether you are on top or whether you're a literal slave. That's a bad place to be. Johnny, I'm always curious about the money aspect. You don't seem to have gone down the Patreon route, which is very popular nowadays. It looks like it could be a major money spinner. Are you guys going to be able to retire to Florida in your 50s?
What's a money spinner?
I don't know. It must be something they say down in Florida.
Huh.
We did have a Patreon. It's been a long, winding road to. Yeah, we did. We had a Patreon.
We had Subbable. And then when they went over to Patreon.
We converted to Patreon and were there for about a year and a half. And we stopped it because we didn't like
the
tier
system. Shit, I don't
remember this. Because, Subbable got bought by Patreon.
Uh-huh.
So we got rolled over. We didn't have a choice in that.
But I thought we, immediately when that happened started working
on
the
club.
Yeah,
we did. Because we're like, this is bullshit. The fact that, Patreon, this gotten them in trouble a couple other times since, is like, I don't like my contract between you guys and me having a third party in there.
Yeah.
Like, Subbable had a very specific reward mechanism in place, and then when they sold out to Patreon, it was different, and their response was, oh, well, you don't owe, you don't, there's no obligation to honor any particular rewards. There's no, and that really sucks. I don't like being forced to change the terms on people with no recourse. So we kind of rolled our own. Now, that's something, because you're right, Patreon's very popular. It would be interesting to have a scaled down version of the club that we could run from Patreon or some way to merge those together. But I don't know. We haven't quite gotten any of that figured out. I would love that where you could support us by subbing on Twitch or going to Patreon or going to the club. And the experience is mostly the same, but there's a little bit differences and pluses for each one. And then people can say whether they want to be on all three or they want to be on this
one. Or there's a hierarchy to it, right? Club, you will get everything we ever do.
Right.
We're doing premium Twitch stuff, you'll get access to that, right? We'll post it on the website for you.
Yeah.
The club kind of being the alpha of of ways to interact with Bald Move. But then having, lower tiers where, Patreon is suitable for these things, so let's let the people who want to do Patreon and don't really want to do the club do it there on their own terms, right? And they'll get the subset of content that Patreon is suitable for, that kind of stuff. That would be cool. And I don't know, it's something we haven't thought much about, but maybe for the future.
As far as retiring to Florida in my 50s, nah.
I would not retire to Florida in my 30s or my 40s or my 50s.
Yeah.
Or my 90s.
Florida's
not a place for me.
My current plan is to retire to a sailboat in 15 or 20 years and then go wherever the hell I want, weather permitting. But
Yeah.
Also, are you friends or mortal enemies with my other fave podcasters, the Shat on TV crew?
I would say neither. We've interacted with them. Actually, they were part of, I think they were part of the pod pack that we did for Game of Thrones a few years ago. So definitely not mortal enemies. Don't know that I'd call them friends, even though I've interacted with them.
Yeah. We need to meet them in real life. Not everyone that we've met in real life, we've become friends with. So there's
everyone,
a good chance.
Yeah.
There's a good chance. There's no podcast where we've met oh, this fucker's an asshole.
No.
We've become good friends with everybody. So we need to get together sometime, I guess.
All right. Alistair asks, if we are aware of XJW activists such as John Cedars, and if we'd ever consider doing an interview about our experiences in the religion. He says he knows some people currently in the organization, and I'm so curious about how people come to wake up and how best to help others wake up.
I really like John Cedars. I admire what he does. I do subscribe to his content because, my son has still got one foot in that door. So I like to keep up with I was just watching some content about they're doing the summer series, the district assemblies. And I was watching his commentary and some of the things they're doing. Cause I like to know like, if they're going to do some scary Armageddon shit, like, what I'm going to have, like, when he gets back from this thing, what he's going to be asking me about and talking to me about. As soon as he's, like, if he ever definitively is like, yeah, this is not for me, and then I'll probably unsubscribe and wish John well, but he's really, yeah, he's a really cool guy, and he's very good at, like, explaining, like, to people that are, like he's a very good advocate for why the Jehovah's Witnesses are particularly dangerous as a religious movement and how destructive they are to people's lives and families. And he does it in like a cheerful, non-combative, but very definitive and firm way. And I would, if he ever wanted to interview with me, I would do it in a heartbeat. But I wouldn't know how to put, I guess it's kind of like more of like, at this point, people need to kind of ask me if they want me on, and I always say yes or no. But like, for me to be like, hey, John, I'm a kind of sort of podcaster deal and TV and film, and I'm an ex-Jehovah's Witness. Do you want to have me on your show? I don't even know what that conversation would go like.
Probably like that.
Yeah. And you don't, obviously you never cared about the shit to begin with. So the idea of keeping up on the Jehovah's Witness organization.
Yeah, I mean, I was for a long time into, like, I guess the atheism movement. Not like, oh, I was out there, you know, protesting Christian events or anything.
Right.
But like, I kept up on it, similar to the way you do with XJW stuff. So, like, I'm not completely uninterested in that kind of content, but I just don't have a good reason to pursue it at the moment.
It does seem like because I've dealt with a lot of ex-witnesses. I was good friends with an ex-Mormon, and I'm not trying to draw equivalence to those religions or experiences. I'm just telling you, it seems like when you get out of something like that takes up so much of your life, and then you later come to regret, there's two reactions. One is like, I want to get out, I want to start my life, and I never want to think about that shit ever again. Mm-hmm. And the other reaction is to kind of get stuck. Like, you know, being constantly re-traumatized because you're continue to immerse yourself in complaining about that world. And everybody's different. Everybody goes, like, everybody's got to deal with stuff. But I used to be a lot more into, like, the r/XJW site, some Jehovah's Witness forums. And eventually, like, after I got some healing and some therapy, I felt like, why am I, like, this bums me out. Like, this doesn't represent my life anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And then you kind of drift away. And like I said, I still subscribe to John because he's pretty positive and funny and interesting and engaging. But I am looking forward to the day where I can pay it no more mind.
Yeah.
John, what's the most unexpected thing you found about podcasting?
You do it enough, and just like anything, it feels like work. In some cases.
Yeah, you do it enough, it's...
But that's true of anything. I don't feel like that's like, oh, a thing I've discovered about podcasting. It's more like a thing I've discovered about life. Like, you do anything too much, you got to have a balance.
Unexpected thing I found about podcasting. It's just, I guess, the relationships people form with you seem like it's... Because it's more of an intimate media. And it does seem like people, you know, like there's an intimacy and a closeness in a podcast conversation where you do really feel like you're a part of it. Like, even if you're not, like, you know, you can easily imagine yourself at the table or on the couch or in the car with this conversation. You're in the back seat and you chime in from time to time and you're laughing and it's really, and I've been constantly amazed at how many people have had these, like, you know, form these relationships with us and how supportive they are and how kind they are. And like, all the time people are talking about how, like, you know, just a couple weeks ago we had back to back, like, a guy, like, with the, you know, his dad dying in a hospital, and, you know, our Game of Thrones coverage was kind of brightening his day. And then there's another guy that chimed in last week on the the Chernobyl podcast that he had tragically lost his wife in childbirth, and he's now got this kid, and, like, you know, that we really mean a lot to him. And I know that, you know, Mike and Jerry on Penny Arcade are one of the two guys that got me through when that 1 year gap where I got out of Jehovah's Witness and kind of kicked off and everybody disowned me, and I only had like a friend or two in the whole world. Like, they were kind of like my friends. So that that kind of pseudo relationship, but real relationship, has been an interesting thing to experience. And it's been rewarding. There's also, it's like kind of, it's also kind of weird and strange too, but, I guess that's the thing that surprised me most, how much people would like identify with us.
Yeah.
Aaron, if you could have luscious locks of hair or your current glorious beard, which would you choose? I used to have luscious locks. I had a pretty good head of hair. And I feel like I could have had them both. There was a time where I could have done it. I could have had it all. I wish I'd grown my hair out when I was 20, grow my hair out to like shoulder length with a cool beard in my 20s or something. I don't know. That wasn't me back in the day, but I guess I associate me as with a clean shaven as a Jehovah's Witness. Like, the few times I've shaved my beard bald, I'm like, oh my God.
Yeah.
My buddy Nick used to say, it's like, you're rocking the hoe face. it'd kind of fuck with me. Like, it's seeing the stranger in the mirror. So yeah, I guess even if I could grow out the hair, if I had to give up the beard, I'd keep the beard.
Yeah. I'd say you look at least 3 times better with a beard than without.
The more of my face I can cover here. Let me, it just keeps getting better.
Yeah.
Oh my God. I've never looked better. I've never, never looked better. All right,
Jessica. Are Aaron and Cecily still planning on doing an advice podcast? I really hope it happens.
Yes. Things keep getting away. Recently, her employment by Bald Move.
Great.
Jenny asks, if you could have an hour-long exclusive interview with either Peter Dinklage or Andrew Lincoln, who would you choose and why? I'd go with the Dink.
100%.
I would just bug him about Destiny.
All right, yeah.
I'd go deep in the Destiny lore.
I have some questions about Ghost.
Yeah.
And he'll be like, that's not my dog. What are you talking about?
Oh, no, I'm talking about the artificial construct known as ghosts that were imbued by the Traveler's Light, Peter Dinklage. You did read the script, right?
Once, and it was, I was coked up. Yeah, it would definitely be Dinklage because I wouldn't have to ask him about the shitty stuff. Because, there's genuinely nothing I've seen of Dinklage's work that I thought was bad. Mm-hmm. So, with Andrew Lincoln, I'd have to ask him about some really awful shit in The Walking Dead.
I would say he was never the problem.
No, his acting was serviceable to very good at times. Yeah. Like, not Andrew Lincoln's problem, but the material itself, ugh.
Yeah. I feel like it'd be awkward for both of us, you know?
Right.
Or Peter Dinklage, man. Like, I'm struggling, like you said, I'm struggling to think of anything he's done that's been kind of a full-on disaster.
Yeah.
Even the last season of Game of Thrones, he didn't exactly besmirch his reputation.
No.
He was really good in it.
All right, Gianna, I understand why you guys opted out of Star Trek Discovery coverage, but it will be a crime if you don't give the new Picard show a watch, don't you think? I mean, you're a Jean-Luc namesake, right? I've had to listen to substandard podcasters covering Discovery for 2 seasons. I'm going to need my Bald Move guys on this one. I think you should announce it on June 16th, Captain Picard Day, as I'm sure you're aware. Make it so.
How is June 16th? Because
they dubbed it, so I don't know. It might be Jean-Luc's birthday in the show or something. I have no idea.
Captain Picard Day. So Memory Alpha, of course, has an article on here.
Of course.
Was an annual event held aboard the USS Enterprise D for the ship school children. I remember Picard Day.
Yes.
But why this date for it?
It must have been that day. I don't know.
It was Stardate 2.37.
Yeah, but the Stardates always like translate, right? You could I thought so.
I don't know.
I thought there was like a... people had figured it out, you know?
Hmm.
I wonder if it was Stardate.
Is it the 6th season, episode 16 or something like that?
I don't know.
This page was supposed to explain it to me, and it has not, and it's pissing me off.
But I think the chances of us are covering this Picard series are better than Discovery, simply because Jean-Luc is in it, simply because Patrick Stewart is awesome.
Yeah, no, I would like to. I would like to, for sure. Patrick, what should the average speed limit in the United States be? I don't have a real problem with 75.
Yeah, I don't know what it is right now, like an average.
I do miss...
But it should be 10 miles per hour higher, whatever it is.
I do miss the days in, like, you know, Kansas and Montana where the daylight speeds were, like, reasonable and prudent and it was 85 at night. I was able to do some driving.
85? Wow.
Yeah, it's 85 at night, and then daytime there was this effectively no speed limit, like, reasonable and prudent. Like, you know, and there's probably...
How do you argue that? How do you ever give anyone a ticket? Like, you weren't doing a reasonable and prudent speed.
Like, if they're going 100 miles an hour in the rain, or, like, if there's snow, like, you know.
But Mario Andretti can drive 100 miles an hour in the rain, and that's reasonable and prudent for Mario Andretti.
A street legal car? I don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, Jeff Gordon can do 110 miles an hour in the rain.
I think the big thing is, like, these places where there'd be no, like, the idea that you'd pass a cop would be almost laughable. Like, if you're doing 115 miles an hour in these spots, like, you're not going to see a cop. But, like, when you get close to a city or a town, slow the fuck down. I don't know how it worked, but I just remember that.
I just don't know how
you
enforce a ticket. Like, you walk in there and say, no, it was perfectly reasonable and prudent for me to be doing that speed at that given time.
Yeah.
Prove me guilty.
Maybe, like, it's like an obscenity law. They just know it when they see it.
Bullshit.
All right, your turn.
Me? Mary, what is each of you like the most and least about your job at Ball of Move? I feel like we've mostly covered this.
I mean, like, it's so cool right now because, like, we're planning on the studio and we don't really know what we're doing, but I know whatever we come up with is going to be fucking amazing because I just look at some of the other stuff. Like, I don't think we do this enough, but, like, just to kind of sit back and think about, like, how far we've come. Like, now, you know, we started off in, like, my spare bedroom. We graduated to your spare bedroom. We got an office that was twice the size of your spare bedroom. And this office space is now four times the size of that. And we're going to have, like, two full studios in it. Like, that kind of stuff, like, figuring out new camera stuff and how we're going to get the look and feel and the editing of our videos and stuff down. Like, that stuff is so satisfying. And just sometimes when the podcasts come together and we just, like, genuinely, like, tickle each other, those are, like, great moments that happen, seem like on a weekly basis. The idea that, like, I don't dread coming into work. Mm-hmm. Like, I used to, like, there's a couple of times where I go to places and I just, like, oh, Jesus, I don't fucking even want to go in. It's, like, bum me out to think about work. Now I have too much of it, but it never, like, bums me out thinking about it.
No. I never think, oh, God, I got to go in the office. For me, it's the stuff where we get to be a little experimental and weird and creative.
Yeah.
Like, I had a ton of fun editing our intro for our Kerbal Bald Move Space Administration or whatever the fuck we called it. That was a ton of fun. The Giamatti thing, frankly, ton of work, but also a ton of fun from the writing process all the way to the editing. That was great. The worst stuff for me is always just the stuff that gets repetitive, and I have committed to it, and so I begrudgingly do it. But just, like, you know, I've been grinding on this show that I don't really care about for 10 weeks, and I got to go do another one of those podcasts, or I got to watch this show that I only marginally care about. It's always the stuff that's more, like, freeform, and I don't know. Those are the things I like to do.
Yeah, the worst where it wears me down is covering shows I just don't care. It's not a bad show. It's just, like, you know, it's like, ah, man, like, I already can tell this season's not going to make me happy. Like, you know, late in the season two of Westworld's a bummer. Everybody's angry. This season of Game of Thrones was kind of rough. There's been seasons of Walking Dead like that. Mm-hmm. You know, some Fargo seasons like that. Some things where it's not necessarily bad. It's just like, ah, I gotta choose a side, and it's not fair to the shows. It's going to piss off some segment of fans, and the accusations that, oh, you're only saying this because you want ratings, or you're only saying this because it's like, you know, come on.
The people who are saying that are only the people who've recently found us and have that expectation of all content.
Yeah.
Because, man, we don't fucking do that. I do not say I like a thing if I hate a thing.
Right. And vice versa. We don't hate on something just because it's not like... I do think there are shows like that, like the Pardon the Interruption guys. I love Mike Wilbon and just space the other guy. But, like, they are very open about the fact that they flip a coin about who's going to have the bad take and the good take. And I'm not saying they make shit up, but I'm saying they definitely kind of... There are hot takes that are hot. And mm-hmm. I don't... Sometimes we have hot takes, but they're because we genuinely believe them. It's not
that's the thing. I've learned to trust my feeling on a thing, mm-hmm. right? If I 9 times out of 10, when I think something is either exceptionally bad or exceptionally good or just, you know, kind of whatever, I give my opinion and then I go and look and it's like, oh yeah, everybody's saying this. Like, either it's super polarizing and you've got 50% of the people hating something or 50% loving.
Uh-huh.
And I'm obviously going to come down on one side or another, with my opinion on it.
Uh-huh.
I feel like whenever I have a strong opinion about something, it's almost always lines up with what I read afterward.
Or if not, like, there'll be a vocal minority, or it's not like people are going to be like, I don't know what Jim was.
It's just about, like, I now trust myself enough to where I never go into a podcast thinking, oh, man, if I say what I really think about this, people are going to get pissed and we're going to lose fans. No, because honestly, that's the best thing you can do for a fan is give your honest opinion.
There was a two-parter that?
I think so. Yeah, she continues, with your increasing audience and success, are you feeling any pressure to make changes that you don't want to make?
I think, yeah.
I know for a fact that the community interaction stuff has suffered, and we're having to make changes around that I know, you know, when we started early on, it was like, oh, we enjoy talking with fans and stuff, and now it's gotten to the point where there's so many of them, can't possibly interact. How do you navigate that?
Yeah, I missed the days early on when I got to meaningfully participate in every social media thread and every forum thread that I could give. I read every email closely. I was able to respond to, like, if you didn't get your message read, you at least got a personal response from me. I try to hold on to that stuff as long as you can, and it's always painful to, like, oh, we've outgrown a milestone that, like, this is the point where I can no longer read every interesting email. Mm-hmm. And, like, sometimes it's nice to get a show that's smaller where you can go back. Like, Chernobyl's been fun because, yeah. Like, you know, it's like anyone sent, like, a reasonable and meaningful feedback on that, if they sent it to the right mailbox, because he also gets, like, these are not sluice things. Like, it all goes to host at baldmove.com, but they get stamped with the right, and I use those to filter. So, like, I after the fact, I always see, like, a couple people that got into the sluice because they weren't paying attention to what, you know, they're sending it to the Game of Thrones or whatever. But, like, yeah, like, sometimes it's nice to go to smaller shows that you can have meaningful feedback. But, like, if shows get big, there's going to be a point where, like, okay, I can no longer keep track. I can no longer, you know, read all the mail. I can no longer read the mail on the thing. I can no longer respond to people. And that's tough. And, you know, because, like, for long-term fans, it's probably painful for them, too, because it's like, oh, Aaron and Jim used to be around just as people more. But now, like, you know, that was also when we were doing one show a week and we had jobs and, you know, we could fuck around on our lunch hours and stuff. It's,
yeah.
But that's the stuff that sucks. Like, the personal touches that you used to be able to do and you can't anymore. And I wish there was a way to scale. I wish I could Dr. Manhattan it and just split the Aaron consciousness into 12 different things and remerge it each night. But you can't. Not until I get exposed to dangerous levels of gamma radiation in an unauthorized nuclear test. Sarah, what happens if Aaron and Jim disagree? If this is too personal, I understand. If not, how do people so close on and off work resolve their conflicts?
The pattern I have observed with us, if I'm just being completely frank.
Of what?
If I'm being completely frank here, the pattern I've observed, uh-huh. Our dynamic, is that we argue about it until either... It rarely happens that if we have a disagreement, we settle it in one conversation. So what we typically do is we argue about it, we drop it, and then later on down the road, somebody brings it back up, and we repeat this process until we're either in a place where it makes sense to do the thing that's being suggested, or the other person just gives in.
Mm-hmm.
And that has happened a few times over the course of Bald Move.
Yeah, I think that there's always a point when we have, like, a heated disagreement where... And when I say heated, I don't mean like screaming and yelling, but just more like be very like, I think your course of action will destroy Bald Move and I equally think that your course of action has a potential to destroy Bald Move.
Yeah.
And we, in our infinite wisdom, we set this company up to where we both have a 50-50 say. So, like, literally, I don't know what would happen if one of us just went off and, like, you know, fuck you, I'm going to do it this way. Like, there could be we never gotten that far, because that would be, like, yeah, the constitutional crisis you're always hearing about, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think there's some metagaming, Jim let me have that one thing, and maybe it wasn't as great as I thought, so maybe I'll try it his way, or, well, Jim, you know, like, he was really right about that last one, and this is kind of feels like that. Like, it's not like each game, it's not like a game of poker where you're just a strange opponent. Like, there's a lot of history that goes into... You know, and like there's some things I listen to, like, I think Jim has a better ear for that I don't. And like, I tend to like let him win more of those than other things that might be the reverse, where it's like, no, I feel really strong because of my lived experience that this is true. So we get to a point in the heated disagreement where we realize we're no longer making new points. We're just restating the points that we've already made in a vain hope that the other person... It just obviously they're just too stupid to understand, because if they understood what
it's that right combination of words, right? Like, what is the thing I can say here
that will see them? Because I know there's
to make them see it from my perspective,
right? Because I'm so clearly right that if it's a communication problem, it's not a difference of.
Uh-huh.
And when you get to there, it's like, okay, it's time to cut it, and we'll come back next week and talk about it. Or,
and I think that's the super important thing that we did do is neither one of us can unilaterally just say this is how we're going to do a thing.
Right.
On small things, sometimes like one of us just won't care and it'll be like, yeah, go do it however you want to do it.
Right.
But for big decisions, we set it up to where we each have the exact amount of say as the other person. And I feel like it keeps us from making rash decisions.
Mm-hmm.
And at least everybody feels invested in the solution that we come up with, mm-hmm. as opposed to... like trying some weird self-sabotage thing, right? Where it's like, fuck, this asshole put this plan into place that I hate.
Right.
And so I'm going to go in and not give 100% on this. I'm just going to shit all over it until I prove that it doesn't work, and then we'll go do it my way.
I mean, there's a couple of times, because I do feel like I'm the spokesman for Bald Move, and there's been a couple of times where like, we can do it this way, but I don't know how I'm going to sell it, man. Like, this does seem like I don't understand how this is aligned with our doing this, or like, I feel like if I'm a fan, I feel like this. So but I never want to be like, well, Jim says this way, but wait until I get in poke shit. Like, yeah, if like we decide to do Jim's crazy plan, then I'm going to do whatever I can to make that crazy plan succeed.
Right.
I felt like it's never been an issue where I've worked enough places where that's not true. Like, oh, you won the argument in boardroom. Well, wait until we get the implementation, fucker. Wait until
helping?
Dude,
the fuck is that helping? Well,
so
I guess
many things about what's wrong
climbing
with
that corporate ladder.
Well,
right?
It's not just
like
that,
I could prove this guy's plan is fucking wrong.
Yeah, it's all fun and games when you can be like these high minded debates about things that don't matter. But when you get down to things that where people's lives are at stake, or your livelihood is at stake, or money's at stake, then it's like, you know, winning. It's this existential thing. Like, that's what's wrong with a lot of, you know, politics. And I don't know, because even then I say that and it's like, I think people are bad at seeing what's life and death for people. Like, you know, there's a lot of
healthcare.
Yeah. Well, or just a lot of what's dismissed as identity politics is like, well, I don't worry about dying because I'm this person and I can never even conceive that someone will just snatch me up and beat the shit out of me and leave me for dead. So this isn't important to me. And if it's important to you, it's because it's that's just, you know, it sucks. You know, like this isn't just a esoteric point for me. It's like, I need insulin every month and I can't afford it and I'm going to die. You know, like, and if someone wins because of whatever political thing, instead of like, well, agree or disagree, this is the thing that the people want, so we're going to try to make this thing succeed. It's all about, you know, tearing it down. And it's like, it's amazing that we went to the fucking moon, like something that took 10 years to happen across multiple minutes. Like, it's the times that we come together and accomplish something are dwarfed by the times we don't. And we try not to do that here at Bald Move. So, Katie. Wait, no, this is your turn. Sorry.
Oh, shit. Katie. You both have 24 hours left to live. What do you both eat, drink, do, watch, and what final podcast would you record? Oh, I've got some good ones.
I found a very, this was my one that I'm like, everything that I gave sincere answers. They're very highly personal. And that's like, the they also would change for. From week to week. And it's a weird hypothetical, but the idea of a final podcast to record kind of caught my imagination because I don't know. I used to, like, I've talked about this a couple times. I used to have this kind of dead man switch shell account set up where I had, like, a series of emails that I had dictated to, like, you know, friends and family that were going to be sent out if I didn't, like, log in once a week and say snooze for the next week. So, like, if I died, there would be, you know, like I had a message from my brother, a message from my dad, and they would all be delivered from beyond the grave. And I thought that was in like every year revisiting that and seeing like, oh, I'll want to edit this or, you know, maybe like that was always sad. Like, I don't think this person even gets an email anymore or here's a new person in my life that gets an email. I don't do that anymore. And but like as a podcaster, I could have like a whole series of like private YouTube videos that everyone would get the link to at the, and I'm like, maybe I should do something like that, like send and like, you know, what was if I had a 15-minute thing to say to my son? As a final word or Cecily or you or like, what would that look like? I'm not going to give you any of those answers.
Yeah.
But this,
wow, that's way more serious.
Yeah.
I took it.
Yeah. But eating and drinking and all that shit. I don't know.
I've got it all. I've got all of it. I wrote it all down. All right. I would eat a Neapolitan margarita pizza from Gusta Pizza in Florence, Italy.
Oh,
one of my favorite pizzas. I would drink, I would finally crack open on the last fucking day of my life, the 4 bottles of Invergordon I've got.
The Invergordon 50 or 25?
Still saving 25. Yeah, that Boutique Whiskey Company, batch number 9.
The day we get the studio finished.
Yeah, yeah.
That lunch, we gotta crack that thing open.
For sure, we will.
Drink, yeah.
I have, like I said, I have many bottles.
We need to celebrate our successes more for sure.
Yeah. What would I watch? I would watch the rest of Lost, Halt and Catch Fire, and Deadwood. I'd just kind of catch up on the 3 shows that I haven't finished that I really do want to finish.
I feel like there's more than 24 hours worth of stuff to watch there.
No, I mean, Deadwood, I got like...
Another season? Lost,
18 hours. Lost, I have like 2 episodes, and Halt and Catch Fire.
Oh, I thought you had a full ass season.
I'm very close to the end of Lost.
Wow.
I've been for 10 years.
Wild.
Yeah. And then for my final podcast, I would make it a 24-hour live stream that lasts for 72 hours because that's how long it takes them to find my body. So I would just turn the live stream on, and I guess I would die at some point during that because it's my last day.
Guess I'll die.
And then they'd find me when people got bored of watching a dead body, I guess.
Yeah. They want to see the putrefaction.
Yeah.
He's really swelling up today. Must be hot there. Final question. Holy cow, it's been a long one. Jacob, This is a very specific hypothetical. If Lost were rebooted or spun off sometime in the next decade, would you guys do a podcast for at least the first season, given that only one of you have watched the original show in its entirety?
Neither of us have.
Some are a lot more behind than others.
I would definitely jump on a Lost reboot.
They rebooted Lost? Yeah, fuck yeah. Or even a spinoff I would be in for, because I was all in on Lost. I just, at the end of season 2, I'm like, I just gotten fresh off of the disappointment of being an X-Files fan. I'm like, this feels very Chris Carter to me. This feels like they're making this shit up as they go along, which is fine, but it, you know, my history of a television watcher, that usually blows up in faces more than it becomes rewarding. Like, if you don't even have any kind of end you're steering towards, like, what the fuck? So, because like Lost as a tight 10 to 12 episode season, like I know how this is going to end and I'm going to do all this like crazy science fiction, fantasy, time travel stuff to get there could be really cool. Like clean that up, pick what you're actually trying to do and do it with the full knowledge that that's where you're moving. It would be a day one cover for sure. And that is how you do a 50 million Q&A podcast. I wouldn't expect another one of these for
100 million.
100 million sounds like something that you're...
I mean, we've been slowly
Yeah, last one's 10. Ramping this is up. 50. So 50, yeah, like
no, special. We did.
We didn't do a 25.
No, we did a 10 and a 20.
Did we really? Okay. Yeah. So it'll take a good long, unless Westworld, The Expanse, and I mean, it's going to be interesting to see like how many people come back for like the prequels, the Game of Thrones prequels. There's also this like big Lord of the Rings project Amazon's got going on. There's so much shit that could be huge. You just don't know what it is. So like this could be, it might take us 3 years to get to, or it might take us a year and a half. I don't know. But if you have been interested in hearing us talk about random questions from people, boy, have I got a value add for you. Go to club.baldmove.com, and there's literally hundreds of shows called Lunch with Jim and Aaron where we do this. Sometimes we do other things like carve a pumpkin or tell stories or do weird stuff with video stuff. Mostly we just do jukebox stuff like this with our fans. It's a lot of fun. Tons of other club content if you want to get on the club. But thank you so much for getting us here. It's been a wild ride. The only thing I can promise is we're going to go forward into the future as forthright and as authentic and as transparent as we've gotten to this point. I still, like I said, Bald Move is the best job I've ever had. I feel like I do have a real close personal relationship with a lot of you people. I recognize a lot of faces and names in the forums and the emails and on Twitch, and it's really cool to get to know you people, and I'm really excited to see what is ahead in the years to come. Any last words from you, Jim, on the 50 million celebration?
Yeah, I mean, thanks for everything. It's definitely changed my life, Bald Move, for the better, 99% of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, and couldn't do it without you. That's as trite a statement as I could possibly come up with here.
It's the truth, though.
I know that's the thing. Things become trite because they're so often true.
Bald Move regret. I can't adequately express the appreciation I feel to be allowed to do these things. Like sometimes it hits me, like when you know, like right now we're in the middle of building a studio and how cool that is, or like when I get paid to watch a Star Wars movie or something. Like it's like just like God, I can't. If I could go back and tell 7-year old me what was laying ahead, he'd never believe it. But I wish you guys felt like a tenth of the excitement and gratitude I feel towards the Bald Move community. That's it. We'll see you for another one. There's always stuff going on at Bald Move TV and Bald Movies. If you haven't already, find those on your feed and subscribe or follow us on social media. So, because I know, you know, we don't cover everything. We don't cover everything to everyone's taste, but if you stick around, there'll be something that'll lure you back. See you at 100 million if we don't see any other time before. And until then, I'm Aaron.
And I'm Jim.
Happy 50 million, everybody.